It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running. I'm here. Let the bells ring out, the banners fly. It's too good to be true, but I'm here. Agnes and I both got our outsy-doosy this morning, and so far, fingers crossed, knocking wood chopped from some decimated South Pacific island nation, no doubt. But knocking wood. I screwed that up, so I gotta knock wood. So far, no ill effects, no headache, no nothing. Hell, arm's not even sore. That's just bizarre. We got our second Pfizer at about 11 o'clock this morning, and we had been pounding Gatorade before that, and hyperhydrating. And this time through, they said, "Hey, take the ibuprofen before." Cool, no worries. So we did that too. And now if I could just get the spasms from my rotten discs in my cervical spine to settle down, it should be groovy. Oh, hi, I'm Robin. It is the, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday for this first day of April 2021. I will tell you in advance, there will be no April Fool's jokes on this program. Because I've never been a big fan. Because April Fool's generally takes the form of some sort of semi-believable lie. I could have come on and said something like, "My friends, it was all just a big publicity stunt. Rush Limbaugh never had cancer, and he is back and live on the air." And I guess that would have been okay, but what a horror that would be. No. L. Rushbow is still dead, in case anybody was wondering. But usually there's something about an April Fool's prank that's kind of cruel, and I'm just not into cruelty anymore. I don't think that I ever was. There's no any more to it. Just not into cruelty. And I'm not into, like, upsetting people, unless it's, upsetting people with the real world factuality of the stuff we're dealing with today or tomorrow and here in the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever in the universe under God, amen. Right. But so I won't be pranking anybody, and there's that. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So, thanks go out to our first day of the month subscribers via PayPal. And that means, in point of fact, thanks to Shorty. And thank you very kindly to Tom in sunny San Rafael. Thank you to John in North Carolina. Thank you to Joseph. Thank you to Rusty. Thank you to Cecilia. Thank you all so kindly. And thank you to Anatole for jumping in and getting us started. So, and of course, this is the first broadcast day of the new month. That means Bruce's Memorial Challenge is on the table, courtesy of Laborman and Chris in Germany. And Ralphs, thank you very kindly. They provide the matching money so that we can get the first of the month off to a rousing start. In this case, there's $300 on the table. And if 290 more come in since Anatole got us started, then that 300 bucks will be doubled. And we will have April off to a good start. Thank you. Thank you again so very much to Gary Laborman and to Chris in Germany and to Ralphs for standing the challenge that begins this the new broadcast month every month on the first broadcast. So hopefully we'll get after that, and it would be wonderful if we could, because I love having health insurance, but I'm still not over the fact that it's, you know, $800. I'd like to maybe figure out a way to get it done early this month instead of, you know, sweating down at the end of the month. Anyway, we'll be doing all those things, and I think we've got plenty of thorns to deal with for this evening. So Robin, Gorgeous by the Gorge and Summary of 42, because I didn't get to Joey's Journal yesterday. We're going to do them both today. Jeffrey. Oh, very good, very good. Randy and PA. This program is brought to you by our sole corporate sponsor, Soylent Green is People. Yeah. Very good. Sole corporate sponsor. Is that S-O-L-E or S-O-U-L? Right. And Lamar the Magnificent says, I propose changing April Fool's Day to Donald J. Trump Day due to Donald Trump being a liar and a joke. It's in the... I say it's. We need to make that a formal holiday. What say ye, Horn Family Community Congregation? I would like to... I don't know. I don't know, Lamar. I'm kind of into forgetting that adipose lump of jiggling orange petty jealousies, fears, and insecurities. Well, there's a fun and funny prank, Arthur says, and then there's your mother's dead. Ha ha! April Fools made your face red and I almost had you fainting. So funny. Should have seen your face. Yeah. No. I saw one today from some guy, and I admit I giggled. On the Grand Staircase Escalante Facebook page, guy standing on top of a rock. There's clouds around him. He's got a mirrored sun visor over his face, and he says, "I got special permission to try my wingsuit off of, you know, some high spot in Grand Escalante." And of course, some concerned troll popped in. "I'm reporting you to the park police right now." It was a fucking painter's suit. I mean, I was giggling when I looked at it because it was harmless. "There is no base jumping allowed in any national park. What's wrong with you? You're obscuring your face to hide your identity." And I guess that's the kind of thing that April Fools is made for. But like I said, I confess, I giggled. And it was, I mean, because it was fun to watch the asshole who immediately leapt to furious, went from zero to furious in, you know, less than a second without bothering to. And this is how it's the same mindset that occurs over at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and Newsmuck, and Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. Because they leap to the furious, "I can't believe the liberals are doing that!" so fast that they can't even be bothered to take a breath and figure out whether or not they're being punked. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got punked. But it wasn't on April Fool's. You'll find out in a minute. Anyway, to start Joey's journal, Jeffrey gets us going. Yes, today is April Fool's Day, but every day with the Republicans in Congress is April Fool's, because they always proclaim that they're willing to work together and across the aisle, and then they vote against virtually everything, including the stimulus plan, which they voted for when their avatar idiot was president. No, Mitch McConnell, you and your cock and bullshit caucus are not fooling anybody. And Jeffrey would like to extend warm wishes on this cold day. Robin, you looked absolutely gorgeous by the bridge in your latest Facebook picture.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you so very much. I had fun. And that post has gotten more of a response than anything I've ever put on Facebook. So maybe it says something. Maybe it probably says something about Facebook's the algorithms. But thank you so much for all the kind words. Really, really.
Now, summary of 42. Yes, says Joey, I just had to name Tuesday's journal Summer of 42 just to hear Robin say no, it was not the Summer of 42, but rather the theme from a summer place. So then I could tell the story of the Summer of 42. I bet Giraffrey that Robin would say it was not the Summer of 42 at least three times, and I gave Jeffrey $14 every time Robin said it was not the Summer of 42, so Jeffrey ended up with $42, which I'm sure he's going to blow on Long Island iced teas over at, the Percy Faith Orchestra did perform both summer songs, Summer of 42 and Summer Place, on an album which I still possess to this day, and Jeffrey adds, then I, Jeffrey the Giraffe, went on to mess up the theme from Mahogany just for good musical version. Yes, I wanted to intentionally mess up the theme from Mahogany just for good measure. So please note that. Oh, dear God. The only radio program with an incorrigible giraffe. But Jeffrey does have an instrumental point. Since we were discussing musical notes and measure, shall we venture to Piano Italy? No, Jeffrey. You mean Pianosa. And that's an island near the coast of Italy in the Mediterranean Sea, since we were speaking of the Summer of 42, which featured a World War II airman who was killed in that war, rendering Dorothy a widow, I think just naturally leads us to the book Catch 22, where a man named Yossarian is stationed in the Air Force at Pianosa. By the way, it was not originally Catch 22. Joseph Heller and the publishers actually spent a considerable amount of time figuring out which number to make the catch. It's a hell of a catch, that Catch 22. Now, Robin, Joey says, I had to read Catch 22 in my sophomore year of college. Good for your professor. And had to write a paper on the book. Ironically, this book has a northeastern Ohio to it as well as the Summer of 42, because Catch 22 was banned in Strongsville, Ohio, for some of the content and strong language. Am I being punked again? Am I? Jeffrey has some strong language of his own. After reading about halfway through the book, as far as Joey was concerned, Catch 22 was so bizarre that they should have banned the fucking book everywhere so we'd not have to read the damn thing to write a paper. To Heller with that weirdo work of art.
Literature hater.
Jeffrey has some philosophical thoughts, as if those weren't. As a giraffe, I find it interesting that a city named Strongsville would ban a book with strong language. These things just don't make any sense to me as an intellectually high-minded giraffe.
About 8-10 feet high.
What a pity. G. Gordon Liddy died last night. According to sources, it was not the COVID-19 that got him, so it must have been the H2O that finally got his gate. You know, H2O, water, gate. I'm just glad Liddy lived long enough to see what a real insurrection looked like, because his effort was not very strong. And Jeffrey just wills keep talking. Liddy had a strong will and wrote a book called Will. Liddy should have been on probation, but Carter cleared him and he was free after 4 years in prison, 4 years of 20. However, it does not appear that his will end up in probate either, because despite his name, Liddy G. Gordon did not want his estate to end up in, well, oh, you know this is coming. He didn't want his estate to end up being litigated. All right. Thanks, Giraffe. Ironically, Liddy had a right-wing radio show, which aired on left-wing-sounding radio station with the call letters WJFK emanating from Manassas, Virginia, the one-time home of Lorena Bobbitt.
This week, we've gone from Lauren Bobblehead Boebert to Lorena Bobbitt. One of the Watergate break-in targets by Liddy and the Plumbers, as they were called, was Daniel Ellsberg's office, as Ellsberg would release the Pentagon Papers, which were top secret and not favorable to the Nixon clandestine operations of Vietnam. By the way, Daniel Ellsberg will be 90 next Wednesday, and may he continue to live long and prosperously. As far as birthdays go, my friend Rosa, one of Richard's main caregivers, has a birthday today. That was yesterday. Happy birthday yesterday, Rosa. You're the world's best caregiver. So, an ironic twist. In the novel Catch-22, the main character, Yossarian, is tormented because he just wants to finish his bombing missions and go home. However, the generals just keep raising the number of missions for the fighter pilots and bomber pilots. And Yossarian realizes he will never be able to go home because he will never have enough missions under his belt. Jeffrey interjects, hell, Lorena Bobbitt's husband John didn't have anything under his belt after Lorena got done. Oh, Jeffrey. One of my favorite characters was Officer Milo Minderbinder, who actually made money during the war, just like a good fascist Republican, while poor Yossarian was just trying to figure out a way to get the hell out of harm's way and home from the war. Eventually, Yossarian attempts to declare himself insane so he can be sent home from the war, but the catch there is you have to be sane to declare somebody insane, including yourself, so Yossarian just remains in the war and hangs out in the hospital, insisting he's too injured to fly. Here's the twist. One of Yossarian's best friends dies in Yossarian's arms during the war, and his name is none other than Snowden. Daniel Ellsberg has voiced much support for Edward Snowden, and why not? Because Daniel Ellsberg was charged under the Espionage Act of 1917, but all charges were eventually dismissed. Ellsberg is generally viewed as a very patriotic and excellent humanitarian, as he received the 2018 Olof Palme Prize for his profound humanism and exceptional moral courage. So I ask you, Robin and the Horn family, how should we view Edward Snowden? He's no Daniel Ellsberg. This has been Joey's Journal for the last day of March, Wednesday, the 31st, and the first day of April, 2021, with Giraffe reminding the baseball fans among us on the eve of opening day to check out a book Joey's mom got for him many years ago called, no kidding, The Summer of 41 by David Halverson. Great read. It is a good book. And so, in addition to the to Bruce's Memorial Challenge today, we will add the $42 Summer of 41 Challenge. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, Giraffe. And so that means if we can raise $342, we will be to the good for starting out this month of April. And I'll start paying bills a little bit earlier, which would be fantastic. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, Giraffe. Steve in New York says, Lamar the Magnificent's proposal, I strongly disagree. Generally, April Fool's pranks, jokes, etc. fun, made in good humor. See what I did there, using the Knudlian version of humor with a U in preparation for moving there. The years 1-2017 to 2-2021 were not fun, made in good humor, etc. They are not in the April 1 spirit, so I'm going to move to table that proposal. Proposal tabled. And yes, for the kind compliment, Steve reminds us that Giraffe is proof that gentleman is not a term confined to humans. Mm-hmm. And it's just this is a wonderful way to start April, because I just had a note from Billable Rick, the 62 challenge, shooting your birth year in golf. I'd like to offer the following 62 birth year challenge to commemorate my best ever golf game. No April fooling. This morning, my buddy George and I golfed and shot our personal bests. He, a 70, 10 over par, and me, a 62, 2 over par. My game only included 2 birdies, but 8 one putts for total putts of only 29. Regulation putts for 18 holes is 36. I made every putt of 6 feet or less and made only 2 putts of 10 feet or longer. In addition to the 2 birdies, I added 12 pars and only 4 bogeys. So here's the challenge. I'll kick in $31 and we'll double it to a total of 62 once my challenge is met. Thank you, Billable. Billable says, by the way, I loved your coming out photo on Facebook. Let's dub it Gorgeous Girl on the Gorge. Oh, shucks. I'm blushing. That or the propane fumes are getting to me. Thank you, Billable. So, wow, so 42, let's see, 42, 43, 73. So now it's 373. It's actually 363 because Anatole got us started. There's $363 in challenge money out there. And golly, what a wonderful opportunity to double your money with that much on the table. Please, let's take advantage of this opportunity. Yes. Oh, and Billable says, oh, what a cowbell for, oh, what a pity, G. Gordon Liddy. Giraffery's is a freaking Dylan or a Rhymin' Simon. Yeah, I noticed that, too. Yeah, and have awarded accordingly. Arthur said, I think Jeffrey spends about 6 hours each day researching and working on his puns. Oh, no, it's obvious that a lot of work goes into that. It's just the puns are freaking brutal. Stop it. Stop it, Asa, Brother Deacon. There are no April Fool's jokes on this program today because you already did your April Fool's prank on the program on New Year's Eve, right? Am I right? Yeah, no. There are still people. This is a bit, right? 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 Bob, this is a bit. No, not a bit. Not a bit of a bit. Mm-mm. Real, real, real. And as soon as I get a handle on my voice, it'll be even better. But for now, you know. But no, that's no April Fool's prank, nor was it a New Year's Eve prank. But what Brother Deacon Asa said yesterday, this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, about how Iran is actually a world center for trans surgeries, and they're actually okay with trans people. It's the gay people that they hate. Because Iran. But isn't it just mind-boggling to realize? And you got to wonder what they would think. Well, there's a flaw in that in the first place. What I'm talking about is the Confederate legislatures out there. You know, your Arkansans, your Talabamas, your Mississippi stands and Tennis stands and the like. Maggot legislatures, how's it feel to be more repressive than Iran? Because that's what the Islamic Republic of Iran is actually more accepting, never mind tolerance, more accepting of gender nonconforming individuals than the state of Alabama or the state of Arkansas or the state of South Dakota or the state of Idaho. Doesn't it just kind of make your eyes cross thinking about it? What the? Yeah. Well, it blows my mind. Four months of a prank, says Arthur. That's dedication. Transcendental. Ah, no. No pranks in either instance. But, yeah, okay. Since we're working on terrible puns, that's for you, Arthur. No. Serious question from Steve in New York. Will your transition help with having to endure a sunburn every time you open the refrigerator because you burn under a refrigerator bulb? That was one of the things that blew my mind. No, it doesn't help. In fact, it makes it worse. I have to be more careful under the sun now than I did before because I'm more burn prone. Great. Which, curiously enough, brings me to one of the stories that I had for Thorn in the Side Thursday. It is, shall we say, I don't think it's an April Fool's prank. And I hate it when websites don't dateline their pieces. But I take this as true. And I'm trying to sort it out now. No, this is a real story. Go figure. And as a matter of fact, what it amounts to is it's a Gwyneth Paltrow sighting. And the irony is just beautiful because I had this story in the stack, and then with no consultation whatsoever, Steve in New York raises the issue of my incredibly incinerable skin. And there, and it's a perfect lead-in to this Thorn in the Side Thursday story. Gwyneth Paltrow is out there peddling dangerous information again. From the things that she wants women to stick in their vaginas, jade eggs, to vagina-scented candles. Well, now she's moved on to sunscreen. And she put out a video recently, apparently, where she said she uses a clean mineral sunscreen. Because there are a lot of really harsh chemicals in the conventional sunscreen, so that's a product that I really want to avoid. I'm not, and this is the part where every dermatologist who has seen the video has run screaming into the yard, you know, eating dirt and running rabbits. I'm not a head-to-toe slatherer of sunscreen. But I like to put some of, well, kind of on my nose and the area where the sun really hits. And in the video, she can be seen sort of daintily tapping some sunscreen on the bridge of her schnoz, and then on her cheeks, the apples of her cheeks. Like she was putting on some sort of freaking blush or something. And, God bless her, she doesn't understand the sun. She's lived on a planet that orbits it for all of her however many years. But she doesn't understand that ain't how it works. You and I can sit here and smirk and snark and giggle a little bit, but there are people who actually go to her website and pay attention to what she says. I mean, God only knows how many women have crammed how many things. Yeah. And now she's out there helping people work their way for fun and profit towards skin cancer. Mm-hmm. And so the writer pointing this out says, I find it astounding that we continue to allow these comments about sunscreen to be made. And don't make the free speech argument because it isn't a personal opinion. It's science-backed health advice. After the events of the past year, you know, the pandemic, most of us are a little more enlightened when it comes to disengaging from nefarious information sources. So why is perpetuating misinformation about sunscreen, a product engineered to protect us from cancer, seen as any less harmful than encouraging other falsehoods about health? Ava Matthews, a co-founder of the next generation sunscreen brand Ultraviolet, well, she said, unfortunately, Gwyneth, we can't actually control where the sun hits. It hits everywhere that the skin is exposed. We believe that more is more, in line with the Cancer Council's recommendation of 5 milliliters of sunscreen, approximately a teaspoon for the face, neck, and ears, which, according to the video, Gwyneth is absolutely not getting. Over in the cosmetics world, there are foundations and stuff, Clinique, Estee Lauder, others, that have sunscreen built into them. SPF 40, anything from SPF 15 to SPF 45, you know, I need SPF Avogadro's number. And it's best if it's waterproof so that you can't sweat it off or chlorine it off in the pool or salt water it off at the beach. Michelle Squire, also a founder of a sunscreen product, said sun cancers can occur anywhere on your face, not just the high points. So using sunscreen like a highlighter is not only incredibly dangerous, but a huge warning sign that anyone peddling this kind of information should be disregarded. Is it possible? I mean, I wonder if it would be possible to statistically determine how many people, Gwyneth there is hurting. I mean, could you take, like, data on units sold and then compare, look for a statistical uptick in skin cancers? And I don't know. But if this stuff sells like the vagina candle did, look for a really good increase in business for the dermatologists out there. And the way she said, you know, there are a lot of harsh chemicals in sunscreen. Well, Ava Matthews said, natural sunscreens don't actually exist. There are two types of sunscreen, mineral or physical, which use inorganic filters to block UV rays, and chemical, which use organic filters. So the chemical is organic, but the mineral is... Are they vegan? But then, having pitched the idea that the sun only strikes the apples of one's cheeks and the bridge of one's nose, she said,
at Goop, we really believe that women are the most powerful, beautiful creatures on Earth, and the closer we are to ourselves, the better off we all are.
Well, it's not the closer we all are to each other, it's the closer we are to the sun! Holy shit. I mean, we live in a... And there's a, I mean, there's a larger point to this. Because we live in a time when people actually say things like, Bill Gates is putting liquid barcodes in the COVID vaccine, and I don't want to be tracked because I've had a vaccine, or... They're deliberately giving people the COVID with 5G technology. And the number of people willing to believe this madness is absolutely breathtaking. The degree to which it proliferates on social media and spreads like faster than the disease itself shocks the conscience and makes, you know, and calls into doubt the ability of humankind to continue to freaking exist. And add to that the Tide Pod Challenge. Or, and I wish they were urban myths, the stories that come out almost annually of people sticking things that ought not be anywhere near them in places that you... Yeah. You know, the good Christians who give their children bleach enemas to chase away the autism. Because, you know, they'd rather destroy their child's bowel then the child be, wait a minute, no. So all we can do is be smart, or try to be smart, in a world that is suffused with idiots. And I say all that as preface to the fact that there is There's more COVID information out there. New COVID information. Encouraging in that it does now appear that people who've been vaccinated do not transmit the disease. That's helpful. It's really helpful and really encouraging. So true. Tom and Sunny San Rafael says,
harsh chemicals in sunscreen?
Yeah, not as harsh as the chemicals in the Effudex she'll be putting on her skin to kill off the skin cancer. Been there twice. It's not pretty when you etch off your own skin. And now that I've reached a certain age, I'm worried about this stuff because I have been repeatedly horribly burned. Starting at about the tender age of 3 or 4. You know, the burn, blister, peel, itch, turn white again thing. Sorry, Robin, but I must say, says Lamar the Magnificent, the best sunscreen for white people is to dip your ass in some mud and leave it at that. You know that ancient peoples actually did that. Because it does work. It does work. Steve in New York points out, sunscreen really is a misnomer. It's less about sunlight than it is about ultraviolet rays. Absolutely true, which is why sunscreen is necessary when it is cloudy. And as far as harmful substances in sunscreen, those substances can't hold a candle to the harmful substances in chemotherapy meds. Echoing what Tom and Sunny San Rafael just said. Mm-hmm. That's some harsh shit. I don't think there's any sunscreen out there that's going to make Gwyneth's lovely hair fall out, but you know what? There damn sure is in chemotherapy for cancer. A dear friend of mine just a couple of days ago had a radical mastectomy, and now she's facing chemo, and she's being so brave about it. And she said, it just blew my mind to find out what all falls out. I'm going to be bare as a baby. Hair falls out of your head. Hair falls out of your nose. The hair falls, your eyebrows fall out. And even down there, no hair. She said, so I guess I'll have that going for me. She's got a great attitude. And I messaged her just to tell her I hope that things went well and in fact went better than even she dared hope. It's such a pernicious thing. The COVID vaccine information does appear to be getting better. And yes, the other thing, the question that I have asked repeatedly, I finally saw an answer a day or so ago. Agnes and I were swapping stories, and she showed me one that she had just seen. She said, finally. And the finally part of it is that scientists are now saying that they think they have established the amount or the duration of immunity for the vaccine. Drum roll, please. 2 weeks after your second shot, if you're getting the two-stage affair, not the Johnson & Johnson, you will have 90%+ immunity to the COVID virus, and some degree of immunity to the variants for about 6 months, which is pretty much the same as you get with the flu. The difference being that the flu kind of really does go away in warm weather. There is evidence to the contrary, because remember, it was not quite a year ago. Yeah, pretty much it was a year ago that COVID Caligula stood at the podium during what we then began referring to as the evening shit show and said, well, you know, when the spring comes and it gets warmer, it'll magically disappear. You fucking homicidal maniac, toxic ass. Ooh, getting windy outside. but it doesn't. And so it kind of makes me wonder if down the road we're going to be doing this about every 6 months for a while, especially the at-risk populations. Well, I think we're going to have, I would bet that we're going to have to. But it's kind of a bummer, but I'm, you know, unless I wake up tomorrow feeling like I got the flu or something or hurting all over it. And you know, even if you do feel miserable for one day, how is that compared to horizontal crucifixion? You know, the whole thing we've talked about where you can hear what's going on around you. You can't necessarily see what's going on around you. You can't speak because you've got a garden hose down your throat. And you hear everybody talking and you can't even so much as wiggle a toe. Mm-hmm. I think one day of feeling miserable beats the daylights out of that, don't you? Billable Rick says, Gwyneth Paltrow. Will anybody please rid us of this idiotic woman between the vagina rocks and the fake sunscreen that she's marketing? How much damage has fair Gwyneth done? I wouldn't be surprised to hear if she's a COVIDiot, leading the charge against people getting vaccinated. By the way, Billable says, I have my Moderna number one set for Wednesday, April 7th at 6 p.m. I recently had a 6.5 A1C test for which I'm taking meds, so I just went ahead and called it diabetes. Well, you're better than me. I'm so embarrassed. I'm ashamed that I let my, you know, quitting smoking was a good thing, but then eating the world wasn't. So, yeah, the A1C's got to come down. I think I'll take the whole day off and play the Moderna Open with my buddies earlier that day. What a fantastic idea. Yeah, I kind of got the shot thing today. I'm not feeling so great. Four! Yeah. And Steve, as to Gwyneth Paltrow, says, I think Gwyneth is getting perilously close to a perpetual moron designation. Yeah, I could have saved that. I could have saved that story for Monday. But you're the one that set it up, Steve. So you know it's on you, buddy. Goop products will not make your hair fall out. Lee in New York says, "Give her time, give her time." Yeah. So sea urchin Kegel exerciser's not a sound concept, Arthur says. I don't know, Robin. She's not a doctor, so naturally I trust her as my go-to for health and fitness. Yeah. It's like the little turf that attacked me yesterday. Scrolled down her page and didn't take long before you got to the Building 7 did not fall over by itself thing. So, yeah. But that's, we needed a little bit of a giggle to get things started. Because the Derek Chauvin trial is still going on, you know, for having killed George Floyd. And the defense, Not a lot of creativity going on. They're behaving just exactly as you would expect a sleazy ass defense lawyer hired by the cop union to behave. Courtney Ross took the stand. Courtney Ross, 45 years old, she was George Floyd's girlfriend for about 3 years. And the defense counsel immediately leapt on her. To get her to testify about the victim's drug use. Yeah, it's sleazy. It's also to be expected. And she said that, George had obtained pills, and gave the name of someone called Maurice Hall. And he had been hospitalized for an overdose. I feel dirty. I just feel dirty even repeating this stuff. And the cop lawyers, of course, were just eating this up like a kitten lapping up cream. It's revolting. They asked her to talk about addiction, and she said, "Addiction, in my opinion, is a lifelong struggle. It's something we dealt with every day. We got addicted and tried really hard to break that addiction many times." Yeah. I don't think being an addict has anything to do with what happens to your body when your air is cut off from the rest of your, from your brain and your heart by having your neck knelt on for 9 minutes. But nonetheless, this is a game called Create a Reasonable Doubt. Because Eric Nelson, the lawyer Chauvin, well, fentanyl killed George Floyd. And, you know, he had other medical conditions, and he probably would have dropped dead, even if Chauvin hadn't put his neck, a knee on his neck and stuck his hand in his pocket and played with his balls and all of those for nearly 9 minutes. Yeah. But that's what they have to do. And it's an act of desperation. The key is not create any doubt. The key is to create a reasonable doubt. And you kind of have to overcome having someone put their knee on your neck for 9 minutes and keep you from breathing. Because most of us, you know, most of us who aren't, who have never used an opioid or who aren't addicted to any substances, you know, most of us, we could just lay there on the ground and a cop, a full-grown man, could place all of the weight of his body through his knee on our neck and prevent us from breathing for 9 minutes, and we'd be fine. Right? No? No. But that's the kind of sleazy tactic that you use when you know that your client is stone-cold guilty. Yeah. Because, among other things, George Floyd did suffer from chronic pain in his back. You know, just like Rush Limbaugh, who somehow managed, even though he was a full-on junkie, wasn't even trying to get well at one point, never had a white cop put his knee on his neck for 9 minutes to see if he could breathe or if being a junkie would kill him. Because one of the things that the jury is aware of is the fact that, God, how many times, 20 or more, that George Floyd said, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe." And hey, wait a minute. If the guy has a drug problem, shouldn't you render aid? Wouldn't that make it more likely? I mean, we know, for instance, that these opioids, we know that that they are respiratory suppressants. That's why so many people die on them. They slow your autonomic system's willingness or ability to breathe. I'm going to be curious to see if Derek Chauvin takes the stand. Because the cross-examination would be withering. Derek, you've had training on how to deal with people who are under the influence of drugs. Isn't that true? Yes. Et cetera, et cetera. And of course, we know now that there are at least six instances where Derek Chauvin used arguably excessive force against people he was trying to apprehend. But guess what? The jury's not going to hear a damned thing about it because of a rule of evidence that says that you can't do that. You can't do that when the office, when the defendant is a white cop, and when the victim's a black man, 45 years old, or any age. Mm-hmm. Now, that part's sarcasm, but the part about not being able to bring in those past bad acts isn't. The theory being that you're trying the person for the thing that the person is charged. But then again, there are exceptions, things like pattern and practice. But no, apparently, the jury's not going to hear about what a violent little prick Derek Chauvin is and was. To their credit, the prosecution brought up Floyd's drug addiction right away, Flavio points out, and thus humanizing his girlfriend and him. Now, why didn't Chauvin administer Narcan if it was a drug overdose? Ah, see, that's why I bet you Chauvin doesn't take the stand. Mm-mm. You have to, if you're a competent prosecution, will bring up their own flaws, so that the defense can't say, see, they never told you about that, see? These things are about human beings. And human beings have flaws. And you know what? We don't yet have a system in this country, at least not formally, that says that being under the influence of fentanyl or hydrocodone or oxycodone or roxycodone or any of those things, we don't have any laws that say that that if you're under the influence of that, it's okay for a cop to kill you. Now, they do that in the Philippines. Under Duterte. But supposedly we don't. And, you know, the Eric Nelson, the pettifogger for Derek Chauvin, he's gonna play that little existential game where he goes home at the end of the day and he says, well, you know, I'm just doing my job. And it's just like when John Adams defended the Redcoats who were charged with the Boston Massacre. It's why we're America. You do that long enough, and your soul completely dies. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, Lee in New York says, unless the police officers knew George Floyd's medical condition, I would consider those facts irrelevant. Also, the officers cannot know that a person being placed under arrest is completely healthy. No, that's true. And it's not being used as exculpatory evidence relative to the conduct. It is being used to say that any determination of cause of death, that it was, you know, a white cop with his knee on a black man's neck for 9 minutes, that isn't really the cause of death. And it's one of the messier parts of Anglo-American jurisprudence, where you let a jury of laymen make scientific findings about things like cause of death. You know, we find that Bob Ewell fell on his knife 32 times. And there's no need to drag that fine young Arthur Radley into court. cuts both ways. I'm not a doctor, Stephen New York says, but anytime I've been tired, drunk, waking up from surgery, etc., I still needed to breathe. As far as the drug abuse you're mentioning, what I find particularly disgusting here is that this line of questioning is not about suggesting an alternate theory of causation of death, but about making Mr. Floyd seem less than human, whose life really wasn't worth as much as most people. Read, white people. Right. It's ostensibly not to slime George Floyd in the eyes of the jurors and make it and sort of make an unstated argument that he had it coming to him. Oh, no, no. It's about attacking the cause of death. Bullshit. And you'll agree, won't you, ma'am, that when George was on drugs, he was definitely a black man? That's where we are. Yeah. Told you. Thorny. Thorny, thorny, thorny. But, the EMT who was called to the scene has been on the stand. He said there was nothing in the world that prevented those cops from calling, those cops from doing CPR on Mr. Floyd. Derek Smith, the EMT in question, said, "There's no reason any layperson can give chest compressions. There's no reason Minneapolis police couldn't have started chest compressions, but they didn't. They walked away and they let him lay there and die." Because what value did George Floyd's life have? He might have passed a counterfeit $20 bill. We kill people in these parts for that. No. And firefighter EMT Genevieve Hansen testified yesterday, too. She said she yelled over and over and over at the police, "Do CPR! Do CPR! He's dying under your knee!" And then the EMT, Ms. Hansen, even said, "I'll do it." And yet they refused, and the knee stayed on his neck, even though she tried to. She said, "Look, I'll show you how to do CPR if you don't know how." I don't know how a member of a jury hears that and just ignores it. And says, "Well, you know, I mean, he was a cop. He was wearing a uniform, you know, and cops wearing uniforms." It's the old Richard Pryor bit that was bitterly funny way back then. There's nothing, but, you know, Richard Pryor said, you know, the cop said, "Uh-oh, I think we broke him." "Is it okay to break up? Is it okay to break a Negro?" "Oh, yeah, right, here it is. Yeah, there it is. California Penal. You can break. And I think that's on Wanted Live in Concert. And it's years before Rodney King. And Richard Pryor was, dare we say, prophetic. Yeah. Stephen New York observes, when she says do CPR, the EMT, and they refuse to do it themselves, let her do it, etc., that becomes premeditation. Yeah. That's when they knew that they wanted him to die. And cops do that. And And Ms. Hansen reported what she had experienced almost contemporaneously. They loaded Mr. Floyd into the ambulance. And she calls 911 and says that she thinks she has watched George Floyd die in front of her. Reckon she has some nightmares? I'd say. So, here we are at the close of the first hour of the program. The end of the filler obster, if you will. And so far, with a wonderful amount of challenge money on the table, the ability to double your money, the challenge money happens if you match it. Well, with that in mind, we're still at zero. And again, that's 300 plus 42 plus 31 for the 343. Yeah, $373 worth of matching funds. And it would be wonderful to take out, to meet all of that and have a relaxed Friday on the front porch. Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah. 373. 10 of it's been met. Yeah. Anatole did that. And thank you, Anatole. It is, of course, it's Thursday. And that means we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So we'll check and, well, stand by a sec. So let's see if we can get any movement on those challenges and check in with Brad and Desi and see what they've got for us, okay?
No fooling. It's Thursday, April 1, 2021.
It's a once-in-a-generation investment in America, unlike anything we've seen or done since we built the interstate highway system and the space race decades ago. In fact, it's the largest American jobs investment since World War II.
Green News Report special coverage. President Biden unveils sweeping American jobs plan to rebuild the nation's infrastructure and take on the climate crisis.
That special coverage straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Democrats want to sell this a $3 trillion infrastructure plan, which includes energy efficiency in buildings, 5G, rural broadband, retraining of workers, lots of stuff, roads, bridges, ports, rail lines, redoing the electrical grid, vehicle charging stations. It sounds very ambitious considering the last guy couldn't build a wall.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, at long last, finally, an infrastructure bill that you can be excited about.
Oh, definitely. President
Calm down there.
President Joe Biden unveiled a sweeping infrastructure jobs plan in a speech in Pittsburgh on Wednesday. His American Jobs Plan proposes spending $2 trillion over 8 years to rebuild America's crumbling infrastructure, part of his Build Back Better pledge, a long list of projects that economists project would create millions of jobs in the short run and strengthen American global competitiveness in the long run. It would also begin action to address accelerating climate impacts that already are costing Americans billions in damages every year, and set the nation on the path to a net zero emissions economy by 2050. It is truly huge, with a 25-page White House fact sheet, but here's a broad overview. It would rebuild and update America's decaying physical infrastructure, repairing roads, bridges, ports, airports, railways, highways, schools, water systems, flood controls, and more, with a focus on climate resilience, modernize the electric power grid, and set a national clean electricity standard to phase out fossil fuels and reach 100% carbon-free electricity by 2035. Replace all lead water service lines.
Well, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, and ensure all Americans have access to affordable broadband internet service. It would transform the nation's largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, our transportation system, away from fossil fuels by boosting domestic electric vehicle manufacturing adoption and investing in a national electric vehicle charging network by 2030. Use the power of the government purse to revive U.S. manufacturing and domestic supply chains by electrifying the entire federal vehicle fleet, and invest in advanced clean energy research and development to boost U.S. global competitiveness and productivity and counter China's moves to dominate the global clean tech market.
That sounds like a lot.
It is. It would also employ American workers to plug abandoned oil and gas wells and coal mines and ensure a just transition for fossil fuel communities. It would pay farmers to sequester carbon and restore soils, establish a civilian climate corps to employ people to restore landscapes and ecosystem services, clean up pollution, and prepare communities for resilience against coming global warming impacts. Biden would fund this infrastructure jobs plan by increasing taxes on corporations.
Uh-oh.
Economists project the proposal will create millions of good-paying jobs across the country and would reduce the national debt.
Well, that's fine, but you're going to raise taxes on corporations?
Well, now it heads to the meat grinder of Congress.
Uh-oh.
Biden said he welcomes Republican input, but Republicans have signaled they plan to block it as too expensive.
Of course.
But economists say that in general, every $1 spent on public investments like this returns roughly $2 in economic benefits. Now, scientists are warning ever more urgently that time is running out for us to act with the speed and scope necessary to curtail the worst consequences of man-made climate change. Biden's proposal establishes the groundwork for equitably decarbonizing the U.S. economy by 2050, a multi-generational challenge. Biden closed his speech in Pittsburgh with this.
Imagine what we can do. Imagine knowing that you're handing your children and grandchildren a country that will lead the world in producing clean energy technology and will need to address one of the biggest threats of our time. That's what we'll do. If we act now, in 50 years, people are going to look back and say, this was the moment that America won the future.
Imagine that. Now all we have to do is get the progressive Democrats who say this is not nearly enough and the conservative Democrats who say this is too expensive, and completely ignore the Republicans because they're not going to go along with anything. Other than that, get this through Congress, get this through the filibuster in the Senate, and everything will work out just fine.
Easy peasy.
For much more on that story and all of them that we couldn't cover today because of it, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We are the future. Let's get to work.
It is an inspiring plan, and some of what Brad Friedman said was absolutely true. I mean, there are some interesting numbers out about the trillion or so dollars that President Biden wants, and according to the, I think, the American Society of Civil Engineers, it's at least $500 billion short in terms of what would have been if we had kept up with infrastructure from the end of the Great Recession to now. But I'll take it, right? Because compared to the zero that the Republicans want, $1 trillion is a hell of a lot of money. I don't know. Are we so far removed now from, you know, because we're all of, 11, 29, 39, 40, 70, 71 days removed from the nightmare reign of Nitwit Nero. And we can't remember that infrastructure happened every other week and nothing happened. Infrastructure week. Remember infrastructure week? Yeah. Let's run over to the stress line and check in with Darlene. Hey, Darlene.
Hey, how many days?
71.
78.
71? 71. Let's see. That's 11 days of January, 28 of February, so 29th. That's 39. 79. Yeah, 79. Okay, so 80 days, I guess.
Not fucking long enough.
No.
Not long enough. And I think the GOP, the grand old party, should be the grand obsolete party. You know, when it comes right down to it, I mean, our infrastructure, you know, I am a little concerned when Jen Psaki keeps trumpeting how this is a, you know, what a one in a century type of infrastructure plan, you know, plan.
Right.
I get really squirrely and I get very uncomfortable with that because I'm not surprised that it's $1 trillion too short or shy because we've so badly neglected our infrastructure. And it's, we are desperate. We desperately need to upgrade it. And yes, I agree. I'll take it. But I feel like it's just scratching the surface because it's been neglected for so long. And we've got this idiot, you know, McConnell, you know, saying, oh, again, the GOP, the Republicans of the party have no. They don't have solutions. All they say is no. No, we can't do it. And if you look at the chart, I don't know if you saw Jen Psaki's presser today. She put up a nice little chart there that just showed how corporate taxation, I wish she had not said, oh, it was way up there, you know, back in the 30s or whatever. And it shows how, you know, how it has, and it's gone up and down, but it's been a steady decline. You know how graphs are and charts are. And really, it just brings into, it makes you realize how much corporations have been allowed to get away with not, quote unquote, paying their fair share. Because really, comparatively, according to that graph, what he's asking for the corporations to pay for that by jacking it from, 21 or 25 or whatever to 28% is nothing in comparison to history.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's nothing. And it's sort of like, you know, when Elizabeth Warren has been saying, look, if you make $50 million, we tax you, 2 cents on every million over the 50? Is that what it is, 2 cents?
I know it's some just silly number. Yeah.
It's and it can pay for, and no one's ever refuted her calculations there. It can pay for daycare for everybody in the country. I mean, that is the monumental amount of wealth that they have acquired. And kind of bringing this to the reason that I called, you know, McConnell and wealth and infrastructure and everything else, fucking Elaine Chao. That, I don't know if you saw this article, that Raw Story just put out. It's kind of late in the day, by Allison Green, a DC report. This is blowing my mind. And it really, I think Elaine Chao is the nexus in the sense of just how tough our Justice Department is going to be under Merrick Garland and whether or not they're going to go after this freaking bitch. Because, you know, looking at this, I am just blown away. This article was
I did see it, and
did
it's just
did you see it?
Yeah, it's just graft in broad daylight, and nobody. Yeah, oh, don't worry about it. We don't even have to pretend to hide anymore.
Well, that is you know, she was quiet for the most part. Like, she was kind of, you know, she was always in the background there, you know, with Trump whenever he, and it was like kind of quiet, going about her stuff. And now, you know, it's kind of been blown wide open. Well, not kind of, it's been blown wide open by this Inspector General report. And, you know, guess who was Attorney General who chose not to pursue, because it was referred to the Justice Department, because there are clear ethics violations that she committed. This article is really, really good because it goes into detail about her father, and it's unclear to me from the article if her parents divorced, but her mother, when her mother died, her mother left her like 25 to 27 million dollars in inheritance. So I'm having to think that if the mother left her that, I'm wondering if there was something where she's, because the father's still alive. And he's known as Dr. Chow. And I guess he fled mainland China, after the communists led by Mao Zedong, won that Chinese Civil War.
No, hold on a minute, because you're reminding me, I think, of a conversation that Dr. Bill and Kevin Shanley had some time back. I thought that Dr. Chow went to school with either Deng Xiaoping or Xi Jinping. I mean, they were pals.
That's not what this article says.
Hmm.
They fled mainland China. Her father, James C. Sheng Chao, fled mainland China after the communists led by Mao Zedong won the Chinese Civil War in 1948. He and his wife, Mulan Chu Chao, went first to Taiwan, where Elaine, who is the oldest of six daughters, was born in 1953 in Taipei. So he was a ship captain. He made his way to New York. And he, according to this article, he started to acquire in the early 60s, 1960s. Okay, so it's really good because it talks about how he built his empire, his business. He started acquiring these dry bulk ships. And then he landed his first big contract with the U.S. government, shipping rice to Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. He was often referred to as Dr. Chow because he received an honorary degree from the Massachusetts Maritime Academy in 2018. Now, maybe what you said, or what you're repeating that Dr. Bill and his friend who knows a lot about China, maybe it's not inconsistent. It could be consistent. But the shipping firm is called Foremost Group, and they operate mainly between the U.S., Brazil, Canada, and China. More than 70% of their freight goes to China. They donated the company Foremost Group, which one of her sisters is involved. Apparently, she has no connections. She has no actual holdings. Elaine Chow. Okay. They donated, this company, Foremost Group, donated $40 million for a building at the Harvard Business School, named for Elaine Chao's mother, who graduated from the school. Okay? So, you know, and they really need to, you know, I don't know who they really need to start looking into this, because there's clearly, when you get into government, you acquire the wealth. I mean, it's just, it's so obvious. That basically, this article is saying that Her family business, even though she's not connected to it, she doesn't have any holdings in it. Now, when her mother died, Mulan, she gave Elaine $25 to $27 million inheritance. Okay, so, and I have to assume that makes up the bulk of what Mitch McConnell is known to be worth. I think it was what, $35-38 million.
Yeah.
When she was in Trump's cabinet, when she was transportation secretary, her family business grew by almost $500,000 a day. When she assumed office in January 2017, her family's business, foremost, was valued at $500 million. Okay. But its value doubled to $1.18 billion by the time she left office, quote-unquote left, no, you know, resigned. And this is by Vessel's value. Yeah,
got while the getting was good?
Yeah, and it's a private Vessel valuation service. Her daddy had a fleet of 22 vessels when she got into office there as the transportation secretary. They sold off older ships. They're some of their older ships, ordered new vessels, and now they have a fleet of 32 vessels. Yeah, she received $25 million from her mother. So she has, quote-unquote, no stake in the family business. So that is something she emphasizes, her staff emphasized. I have no stake in the family business. And the article accuses her of basically misleading, okay, that's very misleading. And her staff have also stated that because Bill Barr refused to prosecute her when the IG report, I think there was a referral made to the DOJ to look into this, Bill Barr said no, and her staff are saying, hey, I'm exonerated. She's exonerated, okay? The theory is, or the idea behind what this article is saying is, as long as she remains in good graces with her daddy, she can inherit a second time when her father kicks, along with her five sisters, okay? So they're saying that this, because this is such a wealthy company, that, you know, her inheritance could be worth tens of millions of dollars. So there was, I guess, the list of abuses. The IG was, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the name right, was Behm, B-E-H-M. He was the inspector general at the time. Trying to find his name, Behm, and that he was one of the five inspector generals that Trump tried to remove. General Mitchell, okay, he was an acting inspector general, Mitchell Behm, B-E-H-M, okay, and he investigated her. Yeah. He investigated Chow in June 2019, okay. And talk to her, well, they interrogated her staff and all that stuff. But anyway, so apparently Trump tried to remove Behm, and he couldn't do it because he could not remove him, because they were digging into corruption, and I guess for some reason they couldn't remove him. And they were waiting for, and because I guess the Senate, they were waiting for the Senate to confirm another nominee. So they had some nominee that I guess was involved with the pipeline safety office. And I guess you can't, and this particular nominee to replace Behm was able to retain his job as a pipeline job. And while becoming the inspector general, but that's unusual because it's a subordinate is being put in a post that he's supposed to be independent over. Okay. As the new inspector general. Yeah. So, I guess, and this is what's creepy. Bem, still in his acting position, 7 months after Trump tried to remove him, Bem sent Chow's investigation, the file on her, to justice with a referral for a criminal investigation. It was sent on December 16th. After one justice office declined to open an investigation, an inspector general's report was sent to a different part of justice. And then on December 17th, the following day, McConnell abruptly brought to the Senate floor a vote to confirm Trump's nominee to replace the transportation inspector general.
Brilliantly filthy, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not saying that that first vote ultimately failed, but the nominee was confirmed later by barely one vote. 48 to 47 was along party lines. So the things that she was accused of, there were 14 events that she planned to attend with her daddy. Just in 1 year, 2017 to 2018. And you're not supposed to mix family matters with official duties. So she was accompanied by her father and her sister, Angela Chow, who's the CEO of the shipping of her dad's shipping company, Foremost Group. And it included book signings by her father. I guess her father had written a book about how he, about his life story. That they would be joining in at official events and even high-level meetings. This is what's amusing, is that personnel at the American Embassy in Beijing were alarmed at this, and they stopped it. They managed to stop it. And here's what you were talking about. I said, while planning that trip, a Transportation Department official emailed the secretary about whether her father wanted to meet with a former classmate, well, maybe this is one of them, thought to be former Chinese President Jiang Zemin?
Yeah, Jiang Zemin, yes.
That's not appropriate, apparently. You can't arrange such a meeting. That's inappropriate for a government agency to do that. And then we heard some stories about this, about her staffers having to provide media and public affairs of support to her daddy. Maintaining lists of his awards, creating a media strategy, public relations plan for him and Foremost Group. I mean, this is so wrong. She had her staff on taxpayer time edit a chapter from a book on her father. She directed Department of Public Affairs staffers to edit his father's Wikipedia page, which has to be an ongoing thing, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay. The public affairs director devised recommended strategy to amplify the coverage in regional Chinese press to build her profile and Chow's profile, the father, and share the story of his journey. They arranged media coverage, coordinated photo opportunities for her and her father, in-depth interviews with the secretary and her father intended solely for the Chinese market. In one event, she did a quid pro quo. She was asked to speak
it's
at an event.
It's filthy. It is. I'm not. It's filthy. And
yeah.
and I. You know.
It goes on and on and on.
And one of the things that just makes me eat dirt and run rabbits is that the linchpin here, the key to this dirty little tableau. Is Bill Barr. Truly,
yes.
I mean, once again, he served as Bill Barr to prosecution.
Exactly.
How does any lawyer, and look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that he's some sort of freaking Perry Mason Solon. He's not one of those one of those ivory tower eggheads who sits, and I mean that with all the love in my heart, you understand, who sits around in law schools pondering the effect of commas versus semicolons, okay? Because, you know, that's what ivory tower intellectual lawyers do. You and I both know that. You know, they write 73-page law review articles on why there isn't a semicolon in a statute. Because, because in some instances it matters. Bill Barr is not one of those lawyers. He's a dirty, he's a dirty little street
he's
fighter.
Dirty. But he like, well, it, I'll make a slight caveat to that. He's a dirty little street fighter. If he has others around him to do the fighting too, like if he won't take on anything that he thinks he won't. My mind goes back to.
He's like a, Darlene, he's like a bald eagle. He won't fight anything his own size.
Precisely. Exactly. And that was a very, it was the what was it called? It was an article about him back in, his Ivy League school. Interceptor or something? I can't remember what it was. Where he's sitting there as attorney general, you know. Under Trump, the Trump administration, who was attorney general before, with his feet up on his desk, and he's so ghastly. And when he was a
I'm
when
sorry,
he was
that,
young,
that little he, aside, oh my God, he's so ghastly.
He's just gross. He's just gross. It's like, I don't think he brushes his teeth in the morning or something. I don't know. He's just so gross. But you're right. He
looks like the kind of guy who changes his boxers about every week and a half, whether he needs to or not.
I don't want to think about that, but there went dinner and then whatever time zone, I think.
No, Central.
For me, it's a, dinner I have late, but, he went, I guess when there were protests at his Ivy League school, he was there to quote unquote, along with his classmates, and it was male, not co-ed, but there to fight these protesters. And he admitted, he said, but he, like, it was a point of pride for him. Well, I made sure that I was with the football players.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
He basically said, I didn't take on anyone that I knew I couldn't beat. So he refused his policy, according to this article, to personally review all cases involving the high level Trump appointees. He declined to prosecute her. And so a spokesman for her said that the Justice Department's decision not to do so closes the book on the issues and exonerates her, And she's like her husband. Hey, I make up the rules, Hey, that's it. So it's, it'll be very, very interesting because, will Merrick Garland do his job? And, will he have the Justice Department, once it's cleaned up and they put some real, officials and lawyers in there, even straight on, they need to gut that thing and go right down the line attorneys. In there, will they go after her? Because that's a big deal if you think about it. According to this article, they still think that the Justice Department can. This is
I don't see why they can't.
The wife of a
I don't see why.
High profile.
But if I may, for just a second, I'd like to point out. Sure. That there needs to be an investigation of Bill Barr. I mean, granted, those are discretionary calls, but when a so-called discretionary call is so far from anything resembling discretion and it's just plain old-fashioned corruption, I'm pretty sure we got a statute for that.
Oh, Robin, are you toying with me? Because it's April Fool's.
No, I'm
are you toying with me? Are you getting my hopes up?
Official corruption is a thing. Corruption in office is a thing.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
There has to be a house cleaning.
Well, you know, and let's start with that freaking, you know, Bull Durham there. Let's start with him. What the fuck is he doing? You know, he's still sitting there lurking around there, you know, from Connecticut there, Durham. Yeah, no, let's do it. But that should be very interesting. Will Merrick do that? Because you know what? This cuts in all these areas, because you're talking about the wife of a high profile, senator who, is supposedly, you know, that Joe Biden knows extremely well. On the flip side, Joe Biden has said, hands off, you know, I don't interfere with what the Justice Department does. So I'm very curious to see, you know, what kind of guts does Merrick Garland have? He's been quiet, haven't heard much. But I'm thinking she's the nexus here. If you're going to go after her, that says something.
Oh, without a doubt. And the question is, and I never have a sufficient answer for this, Darlene. To what extent does someone who is, say, the Attorney General of the United States pay attention to the news? How big does something have to get before someone takes note, who happens to be the Attorney General of the United States? How do you get something like this in front of a Merrick Garland? Do you see the nature of my question?
Yeah, I
because I think there's a whole bunch of, well, I'll be damned, I never heard about that. Because I don't think they're the, sometimes I think elected officials and appointed officials and secretaries and stuff are not plugged in the way we are.
We are. Right. Right. Well, maybe this DC report, because this to me is mind blowing. Maybe this will be a start. And that people need to complain. I mean, can you contact the Justice Department? I don't know. Never thought about that. Well, let me see if there's anything here about it. You know, I know you can contact the FBI, but I don't think that's their area. Well, you can contact them, sure. United States Department of Justice, contact us form. So, you know, I mean, like I inspired, was it Christine to contact the White House about the Rose Garden? And I did that the next day, like I promised I would. Horn listeners, contact the DOJ and say, hey, you need to look into this. This is an outrage. And, you know, again, we're talking about massive, emolument violations, which her boss did, okay, and that the Supreme Court refused to do anything about.
Now, I will say that I worry a little bit about complaints based upon emoluments, because as we saw, there's just not a hell of a lot of data out there. There's not a lot of precedence on emoluments. I'd rather see something like official corruption.
Well, that's fine. I don't care. Yeah. That's fine. I mean, look, you've got to, let's not forget, there's an inspector general's report, and they referred, according to this article, them referred his report. He referred them for criminal investigation. That's pretty substantial. And Trump was trying to get rid of him. And then, you know, McConnell stepped in. Now, I don't know. I'm trying to think, how does this relate to her suddenly resigning, you know, before the end? Oh, all of a sudden, you know, what happened on January 6th was too much for her to bear.
Yeah, after, you know, 4 years of abject corruption and scofflawing, right.
Yeah, it fell flat along with the other one.
Did you think Bill Barr maybe said, honey, it's time to go? You know, maybe. Or was Bill Barr gone by then?
He was also, no, he was gone too. He was, or was on his way out. Wasn't it a couple of weeks before the end?
I think so, yeah.
So she may have, he may not have needed to say anything to her. She may have just saw that. And, you know, I think he, well, it might have been, well, I think he was gone before the January 6th insurrection, wasn't he? I think
you're
question.
Right. Yeah.
I think he was gone. And he, you know what? He may have seen it. He may have known it was coming, for all we know. And that's why he bailed. We don't
that's
know.
A, I that's, mean, a, that's a chilling thought.
That's a chilling thought, and not with not outside the realm of possibility with him. You go, oh, that went a step too far. Oh, I see this coming. So, you know, I don't think he needed necessarily to say anything to her. He just set the example. And this gave her the excuse when she saw what she saw. But I don't think there's any veracity in it. So anyway, they, you know, when you look at how profitable her daddy's business became when she became, you know, of all things, transportation secretary under Trump. Come on. You know, it's like, we don't see this. We see this with how wealthy our Congress critters become, especially the senators, when they've been in Congress for a very long time. They build up this wealth and all, you know, and they leave. I mean, they have rules or laws where even if they have insider information, basically, you know, this kind of stuff that sent Martha Stewart to prison, right? They've written
exactly.
a law so that they're not culpable. That is just an outrage. So you get, you know, people like Loeffler and others, that, you know, with the coronavirus, no less, doing the kind of things that they did. They should be in prison for that. But they wrote the laws so that they're exempt. So
somehow you shouldn't be able to do that.
You should not be able to do that. You know, that's like privileged information. And your position there in the in Congress, you know, to utilize that to increase your own wealth. That's a conflict of interest right there. You're not serving the American people by doing stuff like that.
No.
So anyway, that was my deep dive into that article. I was just absolutely blown away by what I was reading.
It absolutely is, and it's.
We're only just learning about it now.
Yeah.
Okay, because he referred that report what? 2019, something like that, 2020. So, you know, this is major, I think. And I just feel like this kind of stuff, and they need to go after, you know, the top dog there, because there was violation after violation. You know, we all know his daughter and son-in-law became extremely wealthy, you know, faking their roles there as, you know, his advisors, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
So.
Well, and speaking of corruption, though, Darlene, the one that, and I wanted to get to it for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the developing saga of Matt Gaetz.
That was the other thing I was going to mention.
Holy
cow. Oh, boy,
cow.
Is that getting worse and worse for him.
I mean, this is a hell of a statement to read. The FBI knows there are pictures of Gaetz and another elected official in a sexual orgy with underage prostitutes.
You know, I saw something about the FBI and Gaetz. Ah, oh, gee. Wow. Are you shocked?
Oh, no. I mean, he likes booze, drugs, and little girls.
I
And it's just, but it's the other elected official that made my, you know, who's close to Matt Gaetz?
Who's the other elected official? Who's close to, okay, I this is a rhetorical question and I'm running a blank. Who's close to Matt Gaetz? Oh, is it that dude, in the state?
Well, yeah, but there's a Florida-based guy.
But
you know who the first person that came to mind with me for me was when I read another elected official? Because they're all, they're almost interchangeable in their assholery, like they're working from a common script.
Jim Jordan?
Girl, you read my mind.
Jim Shorts.
Yeah, well, who looked the other way while the other way while a doctor was raping boys at the Ohio State University.
Oh, damn, you're rocking it, girl. Yeah, awesome point. That's fucking fantastic. And he's been coming up in reference to him. We've been hearing about him here and there in these articles, and press releases about Matt Gaetz. Cash and drugs? Okay, this is from CNN. Yeah, breaking. Yeah, okay.
and see, Ralph's mind went exactly where yours did just as fast. Jim Shorts Jordan, Ralph's asks? Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
No, I'm sure. My guess is the dear Ralph's, she was there quicker than I was. I was a little slow on the uptake there, but I eventually got there. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I know. I mean, you know, and I hate to say this.
Wait a minute. But where else could he? Where else was Matt Gaetz always being seen? Who else was an elected official?
Well, Gohmert is the other person I'm thinking of.
Trump.
I don't know.
Trump.
That was the other. Well, that was the first person.
The guy who stood in the corner. Dancing like Elaine Bennis from Seinfeld and looking at the little teenage girls.
Correct. Yes. With what's his name in Ghislaine Maxwell? Because remember her last name and Epstein. It's all. I think it's all connected. It's all, you know.
And to the extent, like to the extent, to the extent, Darlene, that the, as we've said before, anytime they're talking about something, it's either something they've done, have done, or plan to do, or want to do. Everything's projection with these filthy assholes.
Projection. Yeah.
Isn't it curious that all this shit sounds ever so QAnon-y? Young girls, yeah. Prostitution rackets, corrupt politicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, maybe Mr. Q is among this group. Who knows? But yeah, that's an excellent point. It does sound very QAnon.
And this is, I mean, it's almost like this QAnon stuff is some sort of, you know, twisted 45 degrees away from reality, self-confessional for what and who these goddamn Republicans really are. I mean, Ralph's just sent me some of the language from the CNN story about Gaetz. And if I can take a moment just to sort of wax personal, all my life, I was not able, you know, maybe it was how I raised or just how I was, but when the guys were standing there, you know what, I went out and got me some last night. Oh. I couldn't do it. It felt wrong. It felt dirty. It felt filthy. It felt awful. It felt degrading. It felt demeaning. And, you know, just like all the other guys, none of that was actually happening to me, but it wasn't happening to them either. They were just lying and they were just filthy about it. And so here's Matt Gaetz, who's up in his 30s, right? And he's lived this privileged life, but he's behaving like a 14-year-old testosterone toxic pubescent boy. Gaetz,
This is just disgusting. And I'm not trying to virtue signal here, Darlene. I hope you know that. Getz allegedly showed off to other lawmakers photos and videos of nude women he said he had slept with, including while on the House floor. The sources, including two people directly shown the material, said Getz displayed the images of women on his phone and talked about having sex with them. One of the videos showed a naked woman with a hula hoop, according to one source. It was a point of pride, one of the sources said of Getz.
I just got the story. It just came over from Raw Story, And, he's pushing 40. 38. And I don't know if you saw, there was an article that was hilarious about how a number of his tweets have not aged well.
No, they don't.
My God, they're so fucking funny. He had one photo of him with a bunch of teenage girls at a school that he went to visit in his capacity as a congressman. And this is someone who is, well, again, you know, they're saying he's trying to take the Trump approach, just keep talking, and muddy up the waters enough, which apparently he's having some success at. But there was some clarification that I saw that, and again, this is the desperation. He's equating his father being wired up by the FBI. He's equating that with the the accusation and investigation of him trafficking minors,
they're not the same case.
They're totally divergent because the situation with him started a year before, apparently, than what the father was involved with. And again, you know, I'm thinking like, the images of him being arrested for drunk driving and how he got away with that.
No, what? Two or three, three times at least, I think. Two, three.
Oh, was it? Wow. Okay. So it was more than one. So dude's got a problem. And
I'm not going to judge him for that.
But I think
the little girls part, fuck yes. Especially because, you know, he's a member of the party of family values.
Let's back the truck up just a little bit here, Robin. Because women would be blamed for that. Right?
Blamed, they have, shamed.
If they drank and got molested or sexually assaulted at a party.
Right? Well, I mean, the Minnesota Supreme Court says that if she drinks the booze by herself and passes out and somebody fucks her, rapes her, that it's her fucking fault. Sorry, throwing the F bombs around. Yeah, how was she dressed?
She had it coming.
But there's an aspect.
How was she dressed?
There's an aspect to this CNN thing that, you know, because me, that is making my brain itch. And that's this. The assertion that on the House floor, he would be sitting around and saying, yeah, look at this. I got some of that last night. And I apologize for how crass that is. It's disgusting. But it's what he was doing. Okay?
Yeah.
So who is he showing it to? Who's the collaborator? Who's the person who has kept their mouth shut? Because I'm pretty sure it's not a Democrat. You know,
right.
It ain't Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, okay?
Who they love to bash and make who seem is like he, she's...
Who is he best buddies with? Haw, 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 look over here, Louie. Yeah, don't you wish you was as young as I am? I'm getting some of this, and you're going home to what?
Well, it might be nice to, it might be good to kind of take a look at some of those old, you know, videos on C-SPAN of his...
Damn!
...on the Justice Committee and see who he's sitting next to. Who is he surrounded
or
by?
When they're milling around on
or
the
when
floor.
They're milling around and he's, you know.
Yeah. And if it did turn, if it turned out that he was showing it to a Democrat, resign. Anybody.
Oh, absolutely.
But anybody he showed that to who didn't immediately blow the whistle. Uh-uh. No, you got to go. It's time to leave.
But think about how brazen that is.
It is.
Brazen.
Sickening.
How brazen to be doing that. And that really is, what does that come from? His place of privilege as this stupid, rich little white boy. Right? Daddy's got money. I got off the, you know, I had there's a mugshot, but I was exonerated. Whatever. That just emboldens a person to do worse. I'm seeing another proclivity for younger women. Matt, what is it, Gates or Getz?
Getz.
His colleagues say he has a love of alcohol and illegal drugs. Oh, see, so, you know, he was just drugged out of his mind.
Come
right?
on, he's a Florida boy. What that means is cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
That's cocaine.
17-year-old. Yeah.
I mean, he's a, you know, he's Tony Montana with his nose in the cocaine mountain.
But, you know, again, we're talking about, you know, colleagues that, okay, this story is saying, you know, less than sterling reputation. And I caught a headline that basically Republicans are, leaving him out, you know, hanging him out to.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Point, right?
Yeah, now they are.
Like that's equivalent to a lynching, right? Less than sterling reputation. Yeah. Although none have jumped to condemn him either. They've largely kept their mouths shut, right? As you say, it's the Reagan rule.
Yeah, thou shalt not criticize another Republican. Yeah. But let's take this a step further, Darlene. Let's take this a step further.
All right.
If he's sitting there flashing this on his phone on the floor of the House to his colleagues, he's doing it in his office. I mean, this is one of those leave no stone unturned kind of things.
Go after his clerks, law clerks.
Go after his legislative aides. Go after his chief of staff. Go after his counsel. All of them, because when people are like this, they're not circumspect about it. Okay, cocaine brain is a weird thing because it makes you not careful. It makes you make dumb, stupid mistakes. And, you know, how about minority counsel on the committees he sits on? Those fuckers want to keep their law licenses. Lean on them. You know, we got a note from Jeremy in Vermont. Darlene, you as well as Robin. First, says Jeremy, I love Darlene. She can curse and yet be funny and intellectual in the same breath. And as for you, Robin, I share that icky feeling. I had that icky feeling when the guys would stand around talking about their conquests. I never had a story to add and always felt it was odd they felt the need to do so, when to me it was clearly all lies. I mean, this is what we talk about when we talk about toxic masculinity. Matt Getz is the poster child, apparently, for toxic masculinity.
And thank you, Jeremy, for that tremendous compliment. I know I have a trucker's mouth, but I feel it helps me relieve so much of the stress, when I swear. And just as a quick side note, I think it's hilarious that Mike Malloy is trying to clean up his clean up how he talks, and it's just like he just should let it rip, because he's so funny, because he swears. And when I listen to him on your program after your program, it's just, you know, I appreciate that, because my family always said it's ignorance when you swear. It just shows ignorance when you swear. But it just feels so right for me.
And you know, and it turns out the exact opposite is true. There's that study that showed that the people who creatively throw around vulgarities are actually probably higher IQ than usual.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll take it. I'll take that.
And meanwhile,
but you're right. You know.
Meanwhile, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I don't mean to talk over you. There's just so
go
much.
Ahead. No,
there's
go
so
for
much
it.
Information going down. So Steve in New York, doing his part as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. After what I just said, what you and I were talking about, I get this email and it says, "Matt Gaetz is chief of staff. Well, well, well," and. Because I don't know why, I don't know what it was that made me, I didn't know this, but I don't know what made me think, you know, because, well, I'll tell you what made me think it, is I've known people like this in the past, and they are not circumspect, and if they're showing things like this, they're not just showing it to one person. You know, it's the asshole who gets caught accidentally sending the email to everybody that he only meant to send to a handful of people, and, you know, she's usually a Republican.
or Dino.
Yeah,
I've had that happen.
Yeah. Chief of Staff to Matt Gaetz, formerly Communications Director for Matt Gaetz. Let's put it this way. She's young and blonde and beautiful. Her name is Jillian Lane Wyant. She is his chief of staff. How do you maintain any sort of sense of dignity as a woman working for that trash? What did she know? When did she know it? How much crap has he said to her? Because no one is, in a congressional office, no one is closer to the actual elected representative than their chief of staff. You can't hide shit from your chief of staff. The chief of staff knows every damn thing about you. I wonder if she realizes her career's on fire and not in a good way.
Okay, I just looked her up, and yeah, she's young. She's very cute. Looks like she's married. And it could be, okay, I'm just going to say it could be a Cuomo thing in the sense that, you know, this is where it's expected. There's another woman I think that works for him that's also very pretty, but older, a little bit older. And I was wondering if that's who it was. I've seen her flanking around him, taking notes and stuff like that. She looks a little bit more serious. But, you know, it could be a Cuomo kind of.
Call me. I mean,
if
I'm out of line, call me out, okay?
I will.
Because this is just too perfect. Her education is from Concordia University, Irvine. She was an All-American NCAA volleyball player. Okay. Wonderful. The first job she lists in May of 2008 to August 2008, 4 months, is research assistant intern at Gingrich Communications. Then you get January 2000.
You're not talking like the gangrene?
Newton Leroy Gangrene. Hey, honey. Yeah, Calista, I'm going to be working late tonight. Me and Jillian got some shit to do.
Oh, it is,
yeah,
oh my
yes,
God,
she's
so
an intern.
It's so incestuous.
Because once upon a time, Calista was the hot little blonde intern.
Holy, you devious little mind you got. That's excellent. Yes.
You know, in the Watergate era, we had Follow the Money.
now we have Follow the Pervy. And I said call me out for a reason. Because I do not want to be open to a charge of saying that the young woman only got her job because she was trying to get work with perverted Republicans who looked at her as an object. I don't want to do that. I want to be a better person than that. But it only gets worse, Darlene. And I realize this smells like guilt by association, but I'm not ascribing any guilt to her. I'm saying that these goddamn Republicans, these good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans, behave in a predictable manner. So she goes, in 2008, from research assistant intern with Gingrich Communications, she worked with Strategy Group for Media in 2010. But by January 2011, she'd gotten a real job in D.C. Her first real paying job in D.C. was staff assistant for Senator Rand Paul. So we've got Gingrich to Rand Paul. Then she's promoted in April 2011 to December 2012 as press assistant for Senator Rand Paul. And then she rises to deputy press secretary for Senator Rand Paul. Sorry, she appears to be a California girl, but I'm using my Southern girl accent. Director of broadcast communications for Senator Rand Paul. Press secretary. She made it all the way to real press secretary for Senator Rand Paul in April of 2015. To August 2016, and then I guess she took a little time off because there's a little bit of a gap in her resume, and there it is, October 2017, communications director for Congressman Matt Gaetz. And then February of 2019, after 3 years serving with Matt Gaetz, chief of staff for Congressman Matt Gaetz. And I'm not trying to imply or infer or.
Hang on there, lady. You're contradicting yourself.
What do you mean?
Because look at who she's chosen to work for.
Okay. Yeah. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is not on this list.
You got it. So I understand. You are being dutiful. You are being dutiful. Okay? In saying what you're saying, the disclaimer, so to speak. But there's some personal responsibility there on her part for who she's choosing to associate herself with and get jobs with. Now, she could be cookie cutter in that respect. You look at her, she's pretty, she's blonde, young, that kind of thing. And that's where, you know, she's, you know, there, I think to a certain degree, she is responsible for who she's choosing to work for. Okay. I'm not saying that warrants her being mistreated or sexually harassed or anything like that, but she's clearly rising through the quote unquote ranks. Not on the Democratic side or the AOC side, but on the Republican side is where that's what she seems to be making. So it's like, do you see what I'm saying? She has her preferences for where, you know, what side of the aisle she wants to be on, I think.
The Concordia College part of this is a tell.
Right, and you know what? She may be the type of she probably plays along. Hey, you know, she expects it.
But the point that I was trying to make is. is there any way that a freak like Matt Gaetz isn't running his gob around her?
Oh, absolutely not. Yes, he, a double negative here. Yes, he is. Oh, and look, he, again, white boy privilege. He has been able to get away. Daddy's money has basically gotten him out of everything. Same thing here now with this latest thing. What did he do? He went right to daddy's money. They're trying to extort us. Even though it's not connected whatsoever, daddy has bailed him out throughout his whole miserable life. It's probably just scratching the surface.
And make no mistake, she is a hardcore partisan. I'm looking at her Twitter feed now.
Of course.
She retweets Rand Paul. She retweets her boss. She was a good soldier and went after Liz Cheney. Wyoming.
We got her number.
Yeah, Wyoming deserves better than Liz Cheney. Pelosi hired a bigot to hunt MAGA. Russell Honoré.
She's basically probably, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene. You know?
Yeah.
But prettier, younger, and behind the scenes, you know, and just so what this latest article is saying,
there's no way this sleazy behavior, as these sources are pointing out, there wasn't even a competent effort to keep it hidden. They were proud of the conduct, Darlene.
Yeah, absolutely. More than half a dozen lawmakers have spoken to reporters about his love of alcohol, Gaetz, and illegal drugs, as well as his proclivity for younger women. So this is the Daily Beast. It's well known among Republican lawmakers that Gaetz was dating a college student, one over the age of consent in 2018. She came to Washington as an intern.
Oh, shit.
There is a cartoonishly scandalous perception of Gaetz, which is so commonplace that sometimes it's visible literally in the halls of Congress. A Hill source sent the Daily Beast. Okay, the Hill source? A Hill source. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking the Hill. But is a Hill, someone on Capitol Hill.
Sent someone in government.
The Daily Beast, a photo of a trash bin outside. Oh, geez. Okay, get ready if you're having dinner. Outside Gaetz's office, as lawmakers cleared out their offices at the end of a recent session, at the top of the heap was an empty Costco-sized box of bearskin Trojan condoms. Outside Gaetz's office? Jesus Christ.
Party in Gaetz's place.
And yeah, but no attempt to even, you know, hide it again, like you were saying. Source of pride. Source of pride.
Yeah.
You know, and not to goon on men generally, but I'm going to. You know, I've always been upset when men refer to women as if we're in a herd, you know. oh, you know, I can't wait to go to the beach to see the girls, watch with these, you know, and they never say women necessarily, say girls. I mean, you can hear in the Beach Boys songs, you know, it's like women are made to almost be nameless, faceless, like we're just, you know, oh,
objects.
I dated a girl.
Objects.
You know, that kind of thing. It's like these so-called girls, you know, we all have lives and trials and tribulations, and we're individuals, we're human beings, but they lump us together, you know, like chicks and, you know, they come up with so many different, you know, names, but they want to get it on with them. But then there's the one that they want to marry, you know, the pure one, the one that, you know, it's like, it's very fucked up. And I'd like to think that that doesn't happen anymore, but I'm 55 and I'm still hearing stuff like that out in media and
sure.
in you know, it's like we don't have an individuality. We don't
right.
have...
It's the theft of agency.
Yeah, theft of self-actualization. Which you know well, you know, in particular. So it's like, it's almost like we're part of a herd, nameless, faceless, you know, the girls in, you know, like the Beach Boys songs about, you know, oh, the girls in California, it's supposed to be a compliment. But it's almost like we're, you know, you listen to songs like Great Beats and everything else like that, and a bunch of old geezers, you know. And again, it's young women in bikinis dancing in front of their videos. It's like, you know, for their videos, it's sort of like we're not respected or viewed as thinking human beings with lives and depth to us. So when you have somebody as sick and twisted as a Matt Getz and a Jim Jordan, and, you know, if you see, like, have you ever seen Jim Jordan's wife?
I didn't know there was one.
Yeah, there is. She seems older than him and very matronly looking from the, I'm assuming it was her. I saw a couple of photos. I'm like, ooh, you know, I would figure he'd have something, you know, younger, that kind of thing. And it's one thing to say that like a Getz would like a younger, likes a younger woman, I guess, you know, he's 38. I mean, if we're talking maybe 20s, 30s or something like young, whatever. But I think what they're saying is it's like a Cuomo thing. He's messed up too. You know, he's gravitating towards women that are basically his daughter's age. And I do think I do think it matters in the sense of where you're at in the aging process. Like I think it's fine for older women to date younger men. I think it's fine for younger women to date older men. And I could, and I mean significant, 20, 30 years difference. I don't have an issue with that, but I think where you're at in the aging process matters. So if you're talking about somebody who's like in their 50s and somebody who's in their 70s, that's far different than somebody who's like in their 20s.
Well, hell yeah, because I mean,
and in the 40s and 50s, you know what I mean? It's like your brain doesn't develop.
Right. For instance, in this state, because of the age of consent, a 20-year-old who has sex with a 15-year-old is going to prison.
Yes.
A 65-year-old who falls in love with a 60-year-old, however, is sweet and charming. And it's all about, it's all rooted in ideas of trying to look out for people whose judgment isn't necessarily fully matured. Yeah. Fully matured, yeah.
Fully matured and developed. I you know, someone in their 60s and someone in their 40s. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I don't. So, you know, but if you're talking about somebody in this who's 63, like Andrew Cuomo, and I have to bring him up in this. We have to be honest about this. And someone that's like 20, 24, 25, you know, that's a little, that's a bit of a stretch. That's a bit of a stretch.
I mean, it can happen. It just seems entirely unlikely that it legitimately it happen, would.
But, right. I mean, it can happen, but it that doesn't, you know, again, things have changed in terms of our understanding of the development of the human mind. Okay. Because I remember that we were told that once a person hits 21, they are out of their adolescent brain.
Yeah, that's changed.
Well, that's changed. Now it's 28.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and apparently in Matt Gaetz's case, it's, you know, 42, and he hasn't gotten there yet. But, I mean, that's a little bit facetious, right. But I think there's some truth. You know, arrested development is a thing. And you should know that Todd chimed in and said, hi, please tell Darlene hello. And said, yes, the Matt Gaetz story has the legs of a centipede. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
And yes, the powder will make the strongest person rationalize bad and risky behavior. Yeah, the Peruvian marching powder. Exactly.
Yeah. And this is where I'm going to push back at you a little bit.
Oh, what have I done?
Okay. Monica Lewinsky.
What?
Okay. Well, you've always said, hey, it was a consensual sexual relationship.
Right.
Technically, you're right. Okay, you're right. Technically, mm-hmm. you're right.
That doesn't make it not creepy.
She was only 21.
Yeah.
And back then, we thought, oh, they're mature adults. Bullshit, not the case. Now we know that's not the case. As she even said, she's just realizing now in her 40s, I think... She didn't even realize the power differential between the two of them, okay? Which made what he did even more egregious. Not only the age difference, I mean, and again, it's like, I think, you know, some of these men know the law, right? Even Cuomo had said to those that have accused him, and I think, I believe them, I think they tell the truth. He made, you know, oh, well, he made sure when I guess when he was talking, I don't know if it's Charlotte, I think it was Charlotte or whatever, or one of the other ones that he said to them, or one of them, oh, you know, I don't mind much younger women, about 22 and up. He made sure he cut the line right at the 21. And it's like, you have to ask yourself, well, when does somebody become mature? You know, it's like, okay, they're 17. Well, they're 18, so it's a year later, so all of a sudden it's okay. Or they're 21, now they're 22, suddenly it's okay. So it's like the law says it's 21. So as long as you're not violating the law, technically, you're in the clear. You know, Monica Lewinsky was only, who the fuck didn't do stupid shit when they were 21?
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody did. And she was, you know, it's amazing she's survived and is seems to really be thriving. Okay? Because technically, you know, her brain hadn't really fully, she still had an adolescent brain at 21. And she has, and I don't think she's lying because she seems like she's very honest and truthful about where she screwed up, and she's apologized, not directly to Hillary Clinton, but, you know, in interviews and things like that. But she said, you know, he targeted her. Bill Clinton targeted her. because she said he paid me an inordinate amount of attention. He would linger more. He would try to extend the conversations. He knew.
It's called,
he knew.
It's called grooming, Darlene.
Cultivating, grooming, which is what the women, a number of the women are accusing Cuomo of. So it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. Basically, that's what was happening there.
Yeah.
And she's a stupid kid. She's a stupid kid. Who wasn't a stupid kid? She's like, yeah, he's you know, kind of handsome, you know, all that kind of stuff. The president of the fucking United States is paying attention to you? You're all mixed up. I'm telling you, it's like, wow.
Hey, let's,
you know?
Hey, let's get a pizza.
With a couple of cigars to boot.
And by the way, I've got Ralph's kindly looked up Mrs. Jim Shorts Jordan. And the guy, you know, the guy just gets grosser and grosser. He's 57 years old. She is a year older than him. They met in junior high school, which is charming. But the way he described it to a local newspaper wasn't. The Washington Examiner, which is a right-wing rag in D.C., interviewed him. And he talked about how he wrestled against her brothers. And then he said, I decided it would be a lot more fun wrestling with Polly than her brothers. That's a decision he made when he was 13 and she was 14. This is a guy who gets an assistant coaching job on the wrestling team at The Ohio State University, and just looks the other way while the team doctor just rapes boys that were in his care. Oh well. That's just Dick. That's what they would say. The doctor's name was Richard something. Yeah, that's just Richard.
Well,
yeah, but, he grabbed my stuff. It's just Richard. He grabs. He likes boys. Oh well.
Well, that's an excellent point. Yeah, I mean, she just looked. You know, maybe Ralph can comment on that, but the one picture I saw of her, she looked older, much older, and it could be just being married to him can age you.
Yeah, she, and more matronly, like mother Karen Pence. She is an art teacher.
Oh, that's interesting. And you know, I don't know why Petraeus is jumping to mind. General Petraeus.
All these things jump to mind. Scandal.
It just jumps to mind, you know, and his wife looked, I'm pretty sure, yeah, she was very matronly looking. She's a heavy set woman, and he, what did he go? He went for the hot, young, athletic, author, writer, whatever she was, to, you know, doing a biography on him. So, you know, and he's mixed up. I think Petraeus is a mess. And that's another story from a long time ago, but it's like, it's just so disrespectful. It's so, I had a friend who said men have some really weird, you know, they're really messed up when it comes to sex and sexuality. They're messed up. And I don't, not all men are like that, but when you look at examples like this, and now lives with this Matt Gaetz, it's just like, it's just,
ew.
To think that they're in our, that they're in positions of power, that they've been elected.
Well, I mean, you know, and the question,
we're talking serious institutions here.
Yeah. And the question I always come back to is, you can't look at any of these people who are in positions of public trust and power without asking questions about the morality and decency of the people who send them.
Exactly.
There's something wrong. There is something wrong with the people, or with apparently a voting majority of the people of the First District of Florida.
Exactly. Because there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, because that's lower Alabama.
Matter, you know?
That's lower Alabama. That's the panhandle of Florida, and it doesn't get any more necky than the panhandle of Florida. It's just...
Well, and I don't know if you noticed this, but Mazie Hirono has been asking any new Biden nominee during confirmation hearings. She comes right out and says, I'm asking everyone this question. Have you been charged with sexual assault? Have you ever sexually assaulted someone, sexually harassed someone? Boom. And it's a tough question to ask. It feels kind of, you know, I'm like, ooh, you know. And, of course, they're also, no, you know, because they're Biden appointees. So let's hope, you know. But that's, I think she's trying to make a statement there.
Yeah.
In asking that very pointed question, it's the first thing she asks. Because then she at least gets them on the record. And it's about, you know, with Kavanaugh. Oh, yes. That was the other thing. Kavanaugh. We're talking about Getz and his.
Yeah, it's another. Steve in New York pointed out it's another. It's another Brett.
It's another. Yeah. And I was thinking that probably when Steve was writing it.
Another rotten, toxic fraternity boy.
Right. And look at the type of interns that he hired to work for him. And they all seem to fit a certain quote-unquote mold. You know, even his wife a little bit, but she seems more sweetsy. I feel sorry for her because I think she has, I think there's domestic abuse issues there for sure. But again, dark hair, white, attractive. You know, hourglass figures, that kind of thing. And he was called out for that. Right? And then the inoculation he was trying to do, but you know, he teaches the basketball, you know, the coaches basketball for young girls. Oh geez.
Not the business,
oh, my brain. My brain doesn't want to go there.
Yeah, it makes your brain hurt, doesn't it?
And it's frightening. It's scary.
I'm going to be walking into the dressing room here in a minute. And don't you worry. Old Uncle Jim ain't going to look at anything. Old Uncle Jim don't need to see. In no way, shape, form, or fashion do I want to see your young, nubile, pubescent bodies. Jim.
Yeah, well, like Trump walking into, you know, walking into the...
They're all the same fucking people. It is a
same thing.
It's cultural. It is
a cult.
Yeah, and it's
kind of the urchural.
It's how they are raised. You know, it all begins in the home.
Yeah.
You know, because we haven't mentioned the other side of the Getz thing. There's no actual extortion, apparently. Somebody came and asked Getz's daddy, who apparently has this kind of walking around money, for a $25 million loan related to a guy that was taken or captured or arrested or whatever in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And there's a $25 million reward out, and I guess they were going to use it to try it, and then, you know, the $25 million reward would be paid, and then they'd pay back Matt Getz's daddy.
That doesn't sound right. What? Who?
It sounds sketchy as hell.
Who reached out to him? Why is the FBI? What? That is not. What?
Yes.
If you're saying that it starts at home, I don't think Matt Getz's his daddy would give a fuck about some prisoner in Iran. Do you? Something isn't adding up here.
in exchange, and this is a document that was given apparently by Matt Getz to the Examiner. In exchange for the funds being arranged and upon the release of Mr. Levinson, who is thought to be dead, the team that delivers Mr. Levinson to the President of the United States shall strongly advocate that President Biden issue a presidential pardon or instruct the Department of Justice to terminate any and all investigations involving Congressman Getz. That was the plan back when they figured Nitwit Nero was sure to be reelected. It's like the old thing about the elephant standing on the turtle standing on the turtle. It's graft and corruption all the way down. They're filthy. They are filthy. The Republican Party is a racketeer-influenced, corrupt organization.
Yeah. I mean, this couldn't happen to a nicer guy with Getz. I'm like, this is just getting better and better and better. But who started this? Donald J. Trump. You know, he got away with so many things. Our institutions failed. Fail safes failed. So they think they can get away with anything. Yeah. If Trump was still prez, they would have pardoned this little freaking weasel. And it's just, oh man. And now, of course, he wants to run to, what is it, Newsmax? And it's like, I'm curious as to why he got, why did he get into Congress in the first place? He's wealthy beyond because of his daddy.
To leverage the status to have sex, get drunk, and snort coke.
That's probably it. There you go.
I mean, Carol Baker observed on Facebook earlier today. She said, yesterday everybody was talking about whether Matt Gaetz would go to Newsmax. Today everybody's wondering if he's going to Supermax. Which I thought was brilliant. God, she's quick.
Oh, she's good.
But whether it's Elaine Chao or Matt Gaetz or any of these freaks, it's the same thing day in, day out. They're dirty as hell, and so are the voters who send them to Washington. I can't emphasize that strongly enough. They do not materialize in Washington without being sent there by people who are every bit as bad as they are.
He
shows up to try to clear his name on Tucker Carlson. And that was a dumpster fire. How bad is it when a little shitbird like Tucker Carlson says it was the weirdest interview he's ever done in his career?
Well, you saw what he did. I never watched Tucker Carlson. I can't stand him. But I watched that interview, like a copy of it on, I don't know where it was, on my Apple News. And that dumbfounded, dumbass look that Tucker Carlson has. He had that with the mouth kind of agape. This guy is the stupidest shit. That he's making as much as he's making. He's a stupid fuck. He doesn't know how to interview. And he looked like stupid, like he typically does. But you saw how it gets brought up Tucker Carlson's the accusation against him.
Yeah.
That was along those same lines. Like he tried to bring him into it. You know what I mean? He said, and it was horrible for you. And then he said, we were at a dinner and I had this nice young lady with me. You know who I'm talking about. And she was not underage. And then Carlson said, I don't remember who you're talking about. And I'm like, oh, geez. He was saying that he sat down for a dinner with Tucker Carlson and his wife, and he had brought a guest with him. And she was a young woman, but totally, of appropriate age. And Carlson said, I don't quite remember the person you're talking about, or that, I don't know if you said that dinner. And you're right. He said, this is the weirdest interview I've ever had. But it was like, I just think Tucker Carlson's dumb. He's dumb. And because it was like he couldn't follow it, but I feel like he's caught, because he would normally protect somebody like Matt Gaetz. And here is Matt Gaetz pulling a Trump, going right on there and basically talking about the very thing that he's being investigated over when he should keep his mouth shut.
He's got to have counsel, and that night counsel was going, oh, fuck, really?
It was gone. Yeah, and he's digging himself into a deeper hole. So, like, you know, what could Carlson do? He couldn't do his, you know, usual shtick of protecting a Republican.
Right. I ain't going down with you.
And, you know, oh, that's why that's the weirdest interview I've ever had.
Well, Steve just wrote in New York and said, in the words of George W. Bush, that was some weird shit.
That was definitely some weird shit.
It was some weird shit.
Anyway,
man.
So that was some weird shit. So I'm actually enjoying this with Gaetz. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I will see how it unfolds, you know. But again, it's all wrapped up in the same. It's like a Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell kind of. It's just the same kind of creepy stuff where they seem to have to go for the teenagers. And it's just like, what the hell is going on?
But it goes back to that adolescent brain. There's a reason that these predators go after young girls, because there is a presumption that their judgment is not as well developed.
There you go.
And that they are susceptible to the trappings of wealth and power. And that, you know, you buy them a new Barbie and you can do anything you want. That was gross.
Well, and that is what prompts then, you know, the accusation that, oh, she looked much older than her years. She looked like she was 21 or 22.
I swear, officer, she said she was 18.
You know, or 18 or whatever. And some of them do look older. I mean, they do. Some of them do. They do look older. But you know what? You kind of
That's what the ID is for. Hate to pester you, honey, but can I see your driver's license? What? You don't have one? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And we had a note from Jude. Jude says, we best walk with balance. Balance provides focusing on not swinging too far. For residing in the center offers an ether, allowing the intellectually discerning ability to be present to the critical needs. Take care, and hello to you and Darlene, and pardon my reference to swinging. Cowbell for Jude on that. Yeah. Shorty in L.A. said, hey, Darlene, Matt Gaetz implicates Tucker on Fucker Carlson tonight. Again, I only know what I've read in the New York Times. I can say that actually you and I went to dinner. This is what you were talking about 2 years ago. Your wife was there, and I brought a friend of mine. You'll remember her. Tucker, I don't remember the woman you're speaking of or the context at all, honestly, but I'm not going to lose this sweet, sweet fucking gig for you.
Yep. Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember who you're talking about and that kind of thing. And I don't remember. And Gaetz was very, you know, not a single twitch or anything.
What you talking about, Willis? Right.
Yeah, I mean, he just, you know, he had that kind of, what do they call it, game face. Because he's desperate. He's in trouble. And he knows it. He knows it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't know why and how Jim Shorts Jordan has been able to escape serious scrutiny to the degree that he has. That perplexes me. Maybe because I don't know. There is an investigation on the school side of things, but he's managed to not really be called out for it, and he's dangerous. He's just a dangerous, you know. And you've got McCarthy, who is an absolute idiot. I mean, the guy is so, I mean, I mean, the only other person that's more phony, that the moment he opens his mouth, you're like, shut your fucking mouth, is Cruz. It's not pulling him off the Judiciary Committee. I don't even know why he's on the Judiciary Committee in the first place. Was he a lawyer at one point?
He went to law school.
Oh, he did go to law school. Okay.
I don't think he's ever practiced.
Did he pass the bar? Okay.
Don't think so.
Never practiced. Okay. But I just, I don't know. And this is what's frustrating, because our house should not have this kind of scandal. We should be dealing with serious issues, serious things. Of course, the media likes to, glomp onto it because it's salacious and all of that. But to me, I feel like we're dealing with a bunch of juvenile delinquents on the Republican side, and I'm quite frankly tired of it. We've got a mess of problems in this country that has to be taken care of. I'd rather not be looking at this kind of stuff. I'd rather it be serious, Sheldon Whitehouse kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. But
straightforward.
Yeah, but Thorn in the Side Thursday could be subtitled Schadenfreude Thursday.
Yeah.
Because, on the one hand, this is a case of rampant,
absolutely,
blatant corruption and hypocrisy. And we get our little giggles.
Karma.
But the other side of it is that this is just another and further piece of clear and convincing evidence of who and what the Republican Party is.
Right.
So there are these investigations of Getz. I want to know why. I want to know about the investigation of what his role was in January 6th, and Lauren Boebert, and Marjorie Trader Green Cucumber, and Jim Shorts Jordan,
Josh Hawley,
and Ted Cruz, and Mike Lee, and Tommy Tater from Alabama.
Louis Gohmert, I want him looked at too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, they need to be, and this isn't moving fast enough for my taste. I mean, every day or almost every, at least every week, we're seeing, another person's been arrested, that kind of thing. And I guess that according to, former prosecutors in the DOJ, this is normal. They start at the bottom of the pyramid. They work their way up. They work their way up till they get to the top. So it takes time.
Sure.
It takes time, and meanwhile we still have the likes of a Mike Lee and a Josh Hawley still kind of trying to fish around, in their capacity on various committees. What do you know? These red herrings that they throw up concerning the metadata, the cell phone calls and things like that. Look, this is well-known stuff. I think there's even case law. You can look at the metadata, and then if you see something irregular, who made a call to whom and whatever, calls from the White House to, people in Congress during that, you can ask. You can FISA it and get the specifics. The phone companies,
mm-hmm,
they have to hold on to this shit for, I think, at least 5 years. But they have, the problem is that the likes of a Josh Hawley and a Mike Lee, they have stuff they can anchor into, about, you're violating people's privacy and the FISA process is fraught with issues, and look at what the, IG Horowitz said, and this is going to complicate things because that's what they're going to hang their hat on, to try to muddy things up so that you can't look at, they're going to try to prevent them from looking at what was said during those phone calls. So we have to find ways not to permit that. They got to clean up the FISA process big time. So hopefully, I hope Christopher Wray is doing that, and I hope that that's one of the things that his boss, Merrick Garland, does. And again, back to Merrick Garland. He's the Attorney General's a very powerful person. Very powerful person in the executive branch. In some respects, more powerful than any of the Supreme Court justices. So, you know, that is, in terms of the day-to-day kind of workings and you know, smooth functioning of a just government.
Exactly.
Let's hope. You know, talking about Freudenschade or however Schadenfreude, whatever, however you say it. I can't say it, but I know what you mean. Let's hope that this is where McConnell, his avarice, his unconstitutional behavior, violating the Constitution by not holding the confirmation hearings for Merrick Garland, let's hope it'll come back to bite him in the ass. That what really all this was winding down to was putting Merrick Garland into the position of Attorney General. Let's hope he does good things and is worthy of that position. And really, you know, he testified that he will. And of course, we heard this with the Mueller investigation. You know, he will go where the facts take him. Well, let's hope we really see that this time on the DOJ level, because we need it. We need this stuff. We need an accounting, and heads need to roll.
Yeah, and it's going to be years, and it points up the necessity of getting. Of making sure that we continue these people in office.
Correct. We need two terms of Joe Biden, assuming he's.
We need a Republican never to be in the presidency again in our lifetimes.
I don't want to see them holding any office. Quite frankly, I don't want them anywhere in either any of the branches of government.
Just let them be.
I agree.
You know, let them be the little braying Confederate minority that they are. And you know, put some effort into turning the tides in places that we have, where we can. I mean, there are things going on. I don't know if you saw
Georgia.
Georgia. I don't know if you saw where the CEO of Delta, having been roundly criticized, Delta, for, you know, being kind of wishy-washy in their response to the voter suppression bill. The CEO of Delta addressed employees and said that the voter suppression law was unacceptable and based on a lie. And the Republican legislature of Georgia all of a sudden had a fit. Now, Delta is the largest private employer in Georgia with 33,000 workers in the state, more even than, you know, Wally World. And having a Delta job means something, because even though they're non-union, and they pay for the privilege of being non-union. In other words, they pay well.
That's right.
And so today, the House of Representatives in Georgia passed a bill. And they do this periodically. They've done this shit before, to take away the tax breaks for Delta's jet fuel. And it was 97-73 for, you know, to punish a CEO who said that something that was evil was evil. And this is all on top of something of Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia. Making a bit of a confession. A lot of this bill's dealing with the mechanics of the election. It has nothing to do with potential fraud or not.
Liar.
Well, no. Truth teller. There's nothing about, there's no reason to worry about voter fraud in Georgia. It didn't happen. He was trying to say that, you know, we're just trying to clean up the process a little bit, make it a little bit more manageable. But what he wound up doing was, because the goddess of irony is inside his brain, she made him say it hasn't, that the bill has nothing to do with potential voter fraud or not.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood. All right.
I mean, he's busted. He busted himself.
He's busted. Has nothing to do with the... Okay, got it. Yep.
And he's mad because he's getting his ass boycotted. It's not fair to be boycotting businesses because of so-called voter suppression bill that is not in Georgia. Well, it is voter suppression. It's plainly voter
suppression.
Yeah, guess what? That's the only purpose.
And corporations are people too, my friend.
Yeah. And Steve points out, wait a minute, the CEO of Delta, isn't that cancel culture? Look at the Republicans trying to cancel somebody for, and the guy's probably a Republican. I'd give you 99.9% chance.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. Well, the MLB wants to get out, right?
The Braves talking about leaving.
Yeah, and I'm glad that Biden encouraged it.
Yeah,
and said, you know, you're leaders. He tried, you know, it's like, look, you know, people look up to you. I support you in doing this, because, you know,
he is proving to be just amazing.
Yes. I mean, he's right. Jesus Christ, he's right there. You know, it's like something must have clicked or evolved in his brain when he was vice president with Obama. It's just like he is just his capacity for, you know, understanding and the trans rights and unions and everything. It's like, I mean,
and Chris in Germany sent me a quote earlier today from the Biden book, as reviewed by the Guardian.
Okay.
And she said, isn't this exactly Biden? In the book, Hunter offers some insights into the Biden family, including an occasion when his father sought to intervene in his addictions by bringing two counselors from a rehab center to the family home in Delaware. When Hunter refused, Joe Biden, quote, suddenly looked terrified and chased him down the driveway, then grabbed him, hugged him, and cried for the longest time. That's a father. That's a real father worried about losing another child.
Can you see
Nitwit Nero chasing Don Jr. or Eric the Dumber anywhere? He waddled down the driveway.
He doesn't care about that. He don't care about his kids. He don't care about himself. He's
you know, if there's anything sad about it, the sad part is that he is incapable of caring. He has a damaged, broken, sociopathic, narcissistic brain.
Oh yeah, you know, he's damaged. He's you're right. His mind is broken, and it's sad because and I feel bad for him when he says this. It's like it's really heart wrenching, but the times that reporters have gone after President Biden about Hunter, he'll walk away saying, "I love my son. I'm proud of my son. I'm proud of my son. I love my son. I'm proud of him." And just the way he says it, it's like it's like, okay, reporter, stop harassing him. You know, it's just, I feel, because you know he means it. And he's just, I just think he's got, you know, there's such a deep depth of heart and feeling there. Probably losing his first wife and his couple of kids and then losing his son, Beau. And if he isn't careful, he's going to lose Major Mike. Major Biden nipped someone else again. That poor dog. I think that dog is a woman's dog. Quite frankly, I think he doesn't seem to have an issue with women. But it's I don't know who he's nipped. I think it's just nipping, which is still shocking when you have a dog. You know, it doesn't hurt, but it's like, oh, you like
don't do that
a little bit.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, you don't want them to do that. But the dog is young and you know. You got to figure, they got all these people around him in black outfits, and they just, you know. So he's got some.
You know, I mean, he's a German Shepherd. Maybe he can smell the Republican leanings. Maybe he can sniff out conservatism. I mean, you know, drug dogs.
It could be.
Yeah, maybe secret Trump longings or something.
Yeah, he can sense, you know, who's truly there for his mommy and daddy and who isn't, you know.
Yeah, because there are elements of creepiness to the Secret Service. When they were sending racist emails about the guy they were supposed to keep from getting murdered? Obama?
Wasn't there news reports that Biden was going to swap out those Secret Service agents who were protecting Trump with those agents that he trusted, that he personally trusted from the time, you know, that he was vice president, you know, and when that singer Kelly Clarkson was there visiting the White House with Jill Biden, dog loved her. I mean, the older dog just sits there, but Major Biden just loved her. She kind of hung back, and they were outside in the back lawn or something. And Jill called, "Come on, Major, come on over. Can I see your dog?" And came right over, was friendly, happy, wagging the tail. So this may be a dog that knows good people from not so good people, you know, and is doing its job, is protecting his mommy and daddy, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm thankful we have who we have in the Oval Office. I hope that we can get this infrastructure bill passed. We desperately need it. And for anyone to poo-poo that, I don't know what the fuck there. And of course, you're going to see that tightwad, you know, wiggle her ass in there. Susan Collins.
I've started something.
Try to, you know, do a watered down bullshit proposal. I think they're already talking about that. I think I heard that in the Jen Psaki press conference today. You know, would he be open to something that the Republicans are suggesting? So, look, we can't screw around here. I think Biden knows you got to go big. I wish they would get off of it's once in 100 year kind of thing. Come on. That's not even, come on. Seriously?
No, and that's how you wind up with ruined infrastructure, because you treat it as something you have to deal with once every 100 years.
Exactly. Big mistake right there. Because in 100 years, we're going to be teleporting our fucking thoughts to each other. I mean, it's like, seriously, you cannot.
Yeah, the Senate will just be a jar of heads in a row of heads in jars. It'll all be Futurama.
Well, I mean, but you know, seriously, can you imagine what you know? I don't know, you know, what we're going to have in terms of connectivity by then. I mean, we just don't know. So it's like this, the infrastructure thing is probably a 100-year project, and it's going to be ongoing. It's ongoing. Positive thing though is that they are talking about, what is that law, that rule, you know, so you don't underpay people who are going to help build the infrastructure that you were concerned about?
Davis-Bacon.
Yes, the Bacon Act. So they, you know, they know that there needs to be, you know, good paying jobs. And I mean, you'll hear AOC, you know, she'll say, look, this isn't the creme de la creme kind of a plan, but it's something, you know, it's better than nothing. And it's probably more than better than nothing, but it's, I think the David Bacon thing is, you know, they're very aware of it. And because he's a very strong with unions, I mean, this is going to put people to work with the wind, you know, the offshore wind farms off New Jersey and everything else. And you know, we're probably going to have the NIMBY types, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But it makes a lot of, it makes a lot of sense. So.
Well, that's, I mean, I'd love to see competent high-speed rail. But as we saw in the situation with California trying to do it, the NIMBYs ruined it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are freight rail right-of-ways where maybe we could, but, you know, you do not want to run passenger rail on freight rail. I learned that the hard way between here and Chicago. It was awful.
Oh, yeah. It's awful. I mean, but, you know, I have a friend who lives in Japan. He teaches English in Japan. I mean, you should see. You should see some of the, the trains and the accommodations.
Oh,
it's like royalty. It's fucking incredible. And it's like, you know, my when we were going through that whole a number of years ago with the high gas prices here, and you know, people have said, well, you know, why are we complaining? Look at what they pay in Europe, you know, $10-$15 a gallon. But my German expat friend who travels the world, basically, he had contacted me during that period and said, you know, Darlene, how are you managing? How are you Americans managing with the high gas prices? He was actually empathetic and felt bad for us. And he said, because he goes, you have a massive country. He said, you people need to travel. He said, here in Europe, he goes, everything is compact. It's low, you know, it's like there's so much public transportation. It's so easy to go, you know, from Spain to France to whatever.
Oh.
It's like he was saying it makes sense for the prices to be high there because it doesn't take that much to get, you know, from one place to another. But here in this nation, it's a different story. Can you imagine the game changer that high speed rail?
Look at the job. Look at the construction jobs. Then look at the permanent jobs running the railroads.
You know, I mean, can you imagine having something that, you know, from Connecticut to California?
Yeah.
I would love that. And it's like, and one of the other things that infuriated me in the press conference today was, you know, always Biden willing to, you know, kind of negotiate on or defer to, you know, things, basically ADA stuff with disabilities. And I'm like, no. You know, what do you mean? So the Republicans are basically going to throw people like me, you know, into the fire, you know, and basically asking if Biden's willing to do it. I hope he doesn't. He doesn't sacrifice us, you know, people like myself.
I you have every right in the world and every reason in the world to worry.
To be worried. I'm worried. Yeah.
But I can't see him. I can't see him do that. I mean, if he won't throw trans people under the bus, he's not going to throw a significantly larger community.
Well, let's hope because you know, I can't fly a plane. I can't go on a plane in my wheelchair. Right now, I can't do that. I cannot do that. I would have to have somebody that I don't know, people I don't know, literally help me in and out of, because I can't get out. I can walk, I can stand, but I cannot get out of chairs. I can't do that anymore. I have to have lifts and things like I have to, my wheelchair is a lift. It has a raising mechanism so I can step down off of the chair because I can't sit in a wheelchair all day long. It drives me nuts. I have to move around. My body needs to move, but I have limitations. So I cannot sit at a regular height chair. So in order for me to get on a plane, I would have to entrust my $28,800. This wheelchair costs more than my car. I would have to entrust them to make sure it's okay in the belly of the plane. 40% of power wheelchairs are damaged in flight.
Yeah.
Damaged.
It's not a risk you can take.
And I'm not independent. I have to rely on people to get me in and out of these fucking chairs, you know, from a plane seat. Okay. So the MDA, Muscular Dystrophy Association, you know, this is why people like Tammy Duckworth is so important. Because she's in a wheelchair and she's tries to advocate for people with disabilities as much as possible. And she brought that up in a hearing at one point. But they talked to the airline industry and they basically said, well, in order for us to do that, we'd have to rip out 6 seats near the bathroom. It's like, So I would be put near the smelly bathroom.
Yeah.
And they're losing money because somehow they feel they have to rip out a bunch of seats. So, because I would prefer, do you know the peace of mind and the freedom to be able to get on to board a plane in my wheelchair? And it has a seatbelt. There are the seat, you know, you do it in a car, in a van. They have a ratchet system. You're secure. You're secure. It's like a regular seat. And to be able to fly from Connecticut to California and go visit people and not worry that when I get off the plane somehow and I, you know, that my wheelchair has been damaged. What the fuck do I do now? I can't drive it.
There's not a rent-a-wreck at the airport for damaged power chairs.
Right. And so what you have to do is you have to hope that the particular wheelchair manufacturer or the sales, the in-between guy, has an office or a place out in California that I can contact and they can come and try and repair it. Meanwhile, what do I do?
Right.
People should be able to board a plane in their wheelchairs and have their wheelchairs. That makes them independent. But because we're talking private industry and airlines, they don't want to do it.
Well, there's a national, and again, go back and thank the conservative revolution for this. It's become an order of belief that it's a bad thing to tell corporations they have to do something. I mean, look at what a miserable experience for trying to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and H.R. 1 are. America has been bombarded for a generation or two with the idea that it's bad for government to govern.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember, I'm trying to remember what year it was. We were coming back from the Gulf Coast, and I even did a rant on air about it. We were coming back from the Gulf Coast and just happened to tune in some right-wing blatherer coming up the east side of Mississippi, and he was having a fit. He was trying to be a little local, you know, kind of cornpone Rush Limbaugh, who's still dead, by the way.
Yay!
And and he was throwing a fit about these lifts that were being like city swimming, you know, municipal pools and stuff were being compelled to install so that the pools would be accessible to people with various disabilities. And I've later seen them, you know, when we go to D.C., I'll see them at the poolside there.
Yeah.
And they're great because who doesn't enjoy getting in the pool for a little bit?
Yeah,
but this guy was throwing,
that.
You know, that's communism. That's communism making it. You know, we got to let the free market sort this out. And it's like, you soulless, merciless, pissy little asshole.
I can't get into a pool. What about my freedom of getting into a pool? That sounds like more like communism to me. I can't get into a pool because I have a disability. What?
No, that's fascism talking.
You know, let's up the ante and say it's fascism. Absolutely.
That's
it's wrong. It's wrong. and we should be better than this.
But we ain't.
And we're not. We're not. So, anyway, I'm hoping that these kinds of things will change, because you know what? That lift, that could help somebody like me get in and out of a pool, could help a woman who's pregnant.
Well, I do have to wrap things up here because I got to go. I got to go get the boss. She's been babysitting today.
Oh,
but
alrighty.
A little bit of progress. Thank you to George, and thank you very kindly to Kevin for jumping in alongside Anatole. We met working backwards. We met Billable Rick's challenge. We brought in this evening. And Kat. I'm sorry, that was a mistake on my part. So. All told, we have met Billable Rick's and Joey and Giraffe's challenges. Thank you again, Catherine, Kat, and Kevin, and George, and Anatole. So thank you very much. Maybe we'll work on Bruce's memorial challenge for Friday on the front porch. But thank you. Thank you for not letting it be a goose egg kind of day. That's really helpful. And, you know, a new month starts new bills. God, I wish I would. It must be lovely to be independently wealthy, you know? Yeah. Right. Yeah. The hamster.
Treadmill.
Yeah. Yeah. Hamster with bright red lipstick on a treadmill. Steve, by the way, in New York said, can't get into a pool. Never mind the fascism. Never mind the communism. Steve says, I think it's straight up dickism. And that guy was the guy in Mississippi. Because that's what they specialize in. Oh, Jesus.
It's Darlene. Cruelty. It's cruel.
Yeah, it is. It's past cruelty. It is an element of viciousness. Plain and simple. And I thank you for a wonderful conversation this evening, Darlene. Ours are always fun, and I enjoy them.
Likewise. Thank you. I hope so. I hope everybody else did too.
I think they did. And we'll talk again soon. And in the meantime, you know, spring will get here someday. I hope this cold snap bypasses you, but God damn, it was brutal today and tomorrow.
No, it's cold. It's cold. We had near the end of last week or something, we had like 60 degree weather. I was grabbing every second of it I could, but we're back down to we had snow today, and
that's why I went and took my trans day of visibility photo on Tuesday, because I knew yesterday was gonna suck.
Nice.
And today, so it was beautiful. It was gorgeous. Learned a little bit about wind and short skirts.
No, it's an extreme. Good thing you don't live where I live, because wind is, that's like a whole other season for us. We have, the wind has been extremely high winds, where it's very kind of concerning. We've had that. We had that today. We had like two or three days of it, 40, 50 mile an hour gusts and higher. So we're experiencing that quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a classic case of March going out like a lion. And, you know, today it was like, hey, it's spring, April Fools. But the thing I'm happy about I'm every bit of 10 hours into my second vaccine. And, hell, my arm doesn't even hurt as much as my arm hurt the last time.
Good. Well, you're two vaccines ahead of me. I cannot find... I can't get an appointment to save my life.
Look for a Republican zip code. That's the trick. Look for the red.
I'm in a Republican zip. No, I'm in one.
Oh, that's right. You are.
I am in one. I am, sadly. Yeah, and we're blood red here on this side. It's very disconcerting. It's like, why did I move here? I just didn't know any better at the time. I mean, I love where I live, but it's like, and I've invested in it. But we only have one place that can cater to people such as me who really aren't first responders and blah, blah, blah. But I'm doing everything I can. I did homebound registration. I just registered again to get text messages from Hartford Healthcare, which will apparently text you when there's an available appointment. I'm trying that. One of my clients has gotten me, to be part of one of their, employee groups to try to get in, and it'll come together. It'll happen. It's just when. That's all. But it'll happen.
In time. Yeah.
I'm hoping it's Pfizer. I'm hoping it's Pfizer because they've got pretty good, the 6-month thing. Which isn't long when you think about it, but I'll take anything at this point. I'll take a placebo.
You'll take a syringe full of old warehouse Trump vodka.
Oh, well, I don't know if I'd go that far.
All right. Have a great evening. Take care.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Our pal Darlene. What a wonderful, wonderful conversation. What a wonderful person. And so here we are at the end of the program, and with any luck at all, we'll all gather together for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. I'm, like I said, crossing my fingers that I'm going to continue to feel this good. And that's, but if anything changes, I'll let you know via social media. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air. And thanks for meeting Joey and Giraffe's and Billable Rick's challenge. Thank you. Makes a world of difference. Thank you to each and every one of you who are partial sponsors of the program and keep it on the air with your kind gifts. Patreon, PayPal, a la carte. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. It is a wonderful little community that you keep going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way in about, 39 minutes. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at HeadOn.live, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Just keep getting better, Ben. Thanks for all you do. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This is a great time for you to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and say, please, 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 in the name of the suffering, a century's worth of suffering in Appalachia, please sign on as a co-sponsor to H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Thank you. Thank you in advance. And please stay safe. Get your vaccine when you can, as soon as you can. In the meantime, take care of yourself. Stay home as much as you can. When you go out, mask up. Keep that mask on. Put a disposable over the good mask. Guard yourself against the variants. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Carry hand sanitizer everywhere you go. Maintain your social distance, like Paul from Parts Unknown says, 15 feet between people wearing masks, and 15 states between people who aren't, or you and someone who isn't. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes toward you and say, hey, look here, she's naked and she's got a hula hoop, avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later.